Hi, hello, it's Vin. Thank you so much for listening to The Vin and Ali Show. We've created something that we're really excited about and we want to share it with you. It's called Recalibrate. It's a 12-step process that helps you create more clarity and more alignment in your life. It's the exact approach that both Ali and I have been using to live happier lives and to achieve all of our wildest dreams in the last 7 years. It's been crazy. Being one of our loyal listeners, we wanted to share a special something with you. Visit recalibrate.online/Vin and Ali to access the course for 70% off. I hope you will check it out. Anyway, let's dive into this episode. Welcome to the Vin and Ali Show, everyone. Lovely. In this episode, we're reviewing the book Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. Oh,
geez, big title.
It's triggering.
Yeah.
Because I always thought die with lots and lots and lots of money. Because
die with lots.
Yeah, I mean, this is such... It's so counter to what I've thought.
Yeah. Maybe we'll write another book and we'll call it Die with Lots.
Yeah, die with plenty.
And it's like, yeah, take everything with you when you die.
I mean, that title alone, yeah. I remember when I first saw the book, it made me feel like, wow, that's really selfish. What do you mean die with zero? What about your children? What about the people you leave behind? Shouldn't you die with a lot so you can give a lot away? Mm. So again, it's such an interesting book, but I have to tell you, the first time I read it.
Or at least die with a lot and then create an epic treasure hunt so that people have to go like Amazing Race all over the world and there's all these like little conditions and like stuff like that. That could be pretty fun.
And also frustrating.
Yeah.
It could be.
But then you make it into a reality TV show.
Wow, you've really thought about this.
I don't know. That just came then and I think I'm in. That's how I want to do it.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What does this book mean to you? If you had to kind of sum it up in a couple of sentences, what is this book about? So our listeners know right up front, what's this book about?
I think it provides a really cool framework for how to live life to its fullest.
Mm.
Right? See, Bill Perkins, who wrote this, seems like a real optimizer. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the first books that I've seen with this angle around just how to optimize experiences.
Mm.
And that's the bit that really stood out to me. You know, like we're big fans of that. Like even in our program, Recalibrate, one of the first things that we do and we focus on is moments, memorable moments. Mm. And I think that's what Bill shows us how to value in this book. So regardless of whether you're young, you're old, what chapter of life you're in, there is a beauty in knowing how to optimize the right type of experiences in accordance with that chapter of your life. And this provides kind of a framework for that, which is really, really cool.
For me, this book has been such a paradigm shift in how I think about life.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we go through life, as we learn more, we add to our definition of what the meaning of life is. And this book, if I was to give it in a few sentences, it's helped me add to the definition of or add to the what is meaning of life bucket of questions, right? Yeah. Well, so what is the meaning of life? And this book helped me answer a part of it. And it's the meaning of life is about collecting experiences that light you up. Whereas I think in my era of life right now, Ali, I spend a lot of my time thinking the main thing I should collect is money.
Mm-hmm.
And because I grew up poor, being from a refugee family, that's been so hard-coded into my DNA that even now in my late 30s, as we have a little more abundance, I am still so focused on how can I make more money? How can I focus on wealth creation? ROI is only, I only think about ROI from a material and money sense. Mm-hmm. I don't think about it from an experience kind of point of view, which this book has completely shifted me.
Yep.
Which is why I messaged you and said, hey, this book has been like medicine for my soul. Yeah.
It's a good reminder, for sure.
Yeah, far out. So, I mean, awesome. Let's get into the lessons on this book. And I just want to quickly do a disclaimer too, because Bill does a great disclaimer on this.
Yeah.
And it's this book is most likely only relevant if you've got a strong disposable income and you've got some savings put away, et cetera. You know, if you're still battling day to day, I mean, I still really think this book is relevant.
Yeah.
But he kind of gives that disclaimer at the beginning that this is more aimed towards if you've got some savings and you've got a strong disposable income.
Yeah. So if you're working, I think, towards a level of stability and security, then it should still, like the lessons that we're about to share, still should set you up with some solid foundations of when you do get to that point as well.
And here is where it's a little paradoxical, because even if you've got a little bit of money, it totally applies. Yeah. As we dive into this, you'll notice how it totally applies.
Love it.
All right.
You go first.
Well, if I'm going first, I'm going to start with a heavy one.
All right.
I never thought of money as stored life energy before.
Mm.
Because if you think about what money is, we spend our cognitive energy, we spend our physical energy, we spend our emotional energy at work 9 till 5, and then we turn all of that energy into dollars, into money. So then money is literally your life energy being stored away.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about money like that. So that was such a paradigm shift for me, because I'm like, wow, what am I storing all of my life energy away for? So that means if I die, say I die at hopefully in the ripe old age of 80, in my 80s, if I die in my 80s and I leave behind $1 million, that's not $1 million, that's 1 million points of my life energy.
Mm.
So then why did I store all of my life energy in dollars? Why? Because think about it. If I left $1 million behind, and that $1 million took me 20 years to save up, 20 years I had to work for, I could have lived my life for those 20 years and experienced experiences with my family and go on trips, do camping. But instead, I chose to exchange life energy for $1 million that I never ended up using.
Yeah.
It's life energy that's gone to waste.
Then you gave it to your kids and they went to the casino and they just put it on red.
They just put it on red and bought.
And then lost. That was it. Yeah, it's a really interesting concept.
It kind of messed with my brain a bit. Yeah.
But it's even the notion of getting a little bit more purposeful with calculating your day-to-day exchanges and what they're really costing you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like say for example, if you do 2 hours of work and you're trading that for an allocation of salary, like what does that actually mean for you? Where is it going?
Yeah.
You know, I think he mentions in the book as well, it's like he thinks about it even when he eats a cake.
Yeah, or a cookie.
Right, or a cookie. It's like, okay, well, how many hours on the treadmill is this actually going to cost me?
Yeah.
It's probably the same as like if you sat there and you've set up a really pointless meeting with someone. It's like, what are you actually costing them right then and yourself in terms of doing that for 2 hours? You know, and then I think these things add up. And then over a period of time, as you said, that life energy gets allocated into things that aren't necessarily all that aligned with who we are.
Mm.
And then we have those potential pangs of regret when we get a little bit older and we're like, why'd I waste so much time on doing that stuff that actually didn't even nourish me that much, or I didn't even enjoy it and I wasn't doing it with like people that I wanted to. And I think this book gets you thinking about that just a little bit differently around how purposeful am I being with my decisions, especially in terms of the way that I allocate my time and my energy, right? In exchange for money.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think it makes you rethink.
Mm.
Don't trade so much of your life energy for just dollars.
Yeah.
You want to use some of your life energy to go and experience life and live life.
Yeah.
You know, because he had this interesting equation where he said, so what we do is we trade all of this life energy for dollars. And then we use those dollars to go and buy experiences.
Hmm.
So he goes, instead of trading it for dollars and then dollars to experience it, you could just bypass it. You could just take this life energy you already have and go and get the experiences you want.
Yep.
And so it's such an interesting way to think. I've never thought like that before in my life.
But it's also the balance between what do we need to do? What decisions and actions do we need to take for the short term?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that's the thing when people view experiences. A lot of the time we're programmed to be like, hey, we need to delay our gratification. We need to put off this experience because we need to focus on setting up foundations for the longer term.
Mm.
And there is an element of that that is correct. Like we do. We have to make decisions that are going to, you know, benefit us over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also need to then balance those a little bit with those experiences that are going to bring us joy and light us up in the moment right now.
Well, because the next 30 to 40 years is not even promised.
Not promised, right?
That's the scary thing about just going all in for the future is because you may not be around in the future.
For sure. But then also that other notion of, hey, imagine you've only got a week to live. You can't really live like that either because you don't – like, you're going to make some interesting choices and then you're going to be like, damn, like, I still got another 40 years and I just really got silly in that week. Right? So, I think there is a balance here that we find, but it's rebalancing that a little bit if you've skewed either way.
And I think I've definitely skewed the other way.
Yeah.
I've skewed the everything is for the future.
Yeah.
I'm so future-focused, man. Yeah. When I read this book, I realized how future-focused I was because I was so resistant to the lessons in it. I was like, oh, it doesn't feel right doing this. This feels like YOLO style of living.
Yeah.
And I think YOLO, you only live once, is a very important framework to use. But then, like you said, you can't lean on that too much because if you do, then you just you'll live with zero.
And that's why I think this book really stood out to us at this moment in the chapter of life that we're in right now. Yeah. Like, we're both in our late 30s.
Oh, man. It feels weird saying that, bro.
So, but we're like transitioning probably into a different chapter of life too.
Mm.
And I think we've both been fortunate where we've had moments where I think we've extracted a lot of enjoyment and used our resources for experiences.
Mm.
But then we've also skewed the other way where we're really focused in on work and our vocation and things that we do, our businesses.
Mm.
And then we probably get that feeling a little bit of, hey, are we going a little bit too hard in a certain area and do we need to then rebalance that and recorrect it a little bit more?
Mm.
And it's going to be interesting, right? Because now we've got kids, they're getting older.
Mm.
Our businesses are a little bit more mature than what they probably were 5 to 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're in this period where probably our health, like, we're still pretty good.
Yeah.
We're active and you're energetic sort of in your late 30s. Mm. But you kind of know that the next 10, 15 years are probably going to start getting a little bit dicey, right? Like, I remember telling you last year, pulling my calf muscle for the first time. It was such a shattering thing for my ego and my identity. And, like, and everyone's like, oh, that's the old man. That's the old man thing. And the old man injury. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it is. Like, I'm not just somebody that can now just start doing playing sport without stretching and not being in peak condition. And it's like, okay, that's a nice realization that you get when you start heading into your 40s. So it's also understanding what chapter of life that we're going into.
Mm.
And I love that. That's what this book really got me thinking about around with this chapter of life. How do I need to then align the way that I use my energy, my time, and my resources?
Mm. I mean, one thing that really stood out in the book is Bill talked about when he was young. And when Bill was young, he was working his ass off to save $1,000. And he had $1,000 and he skimped and he saved. He didn't go to movies with his friends, didn't eat out, you know, skimped on weekend trips away. And for $1,000. And his boss, he told his boss about how proud he was when he saved $1,000. Yeah. And his boss says, "You're an idiot. You're an idiot, Bill."
Yeah.
Because as you get older in life, your ability to make more money will just exponentially increase, right? So you stopped yourself from living when you had nothing to lose at this point. You have so much health, you have so much youth. You skimped away all of these incredible, like you cheaped out on all these incredible experiences to save $1,000. That $1,000, when you're in your mid-30s, you could make that in a week. Whereas you had to deprive yourself of living a fruitful life for a whole year in your 20s when you're in your prime with this youth, you'll make that in a week. In your 30s. And when I thought about that, it made me think about my 20s, Ali. And in my 20s, growing up in an Asian family, I prioritized saving like crazy. I didn't do so many things. I didn't do what I think a lot of my Caucasian friends did, where they went on these Contiki tours. Did you go on a Contiki tour?
No, I didn't have enough money.
Okay, you didn't have enough money? You wanted to? Okay.
My net worth for like the most part of my early 20s was always less than four figures.
Oh, wow.
At its best, like I'd have, like if I had more than like $100, $200 on me at any given time, things were going well.
Dude, in my 20s,
I was horrible.
One of the things I prided myself in was I had more than 10 grand. I always had more than 10 grand.
You were the one in your wallet. You had the one of cash there.
But the thing is, now when I look back, I go, that's actually not something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Because like now I can make money much more easily than I was able to make it in my 20s. So I should have actually spent that money on a Contiki tour, went to Europe and saw the world.
Yeah.
I didn't do any of that, Ali.
Mm.
I didn't travel at all, really. I prioritize having more than $10,000 in my account than experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, like Bill said, his boss was right in that Far out, Bill. That $1,000 you'll make in a week when you're in your 30s. You should have spent that, went out with your friends, created those memorable moments. But instead, he valued the $1,000. I valued the having 10 grand in my account as opposed to going on that European trip that would have created memories for my entire... Because I don't have any of those wonderful memories in my 20s. I don't.
Yeah, see, I wanted it. And I remember even having a theory I'd always talk about. And I'm like, why doesn't the government in Australia, like, because they give you, you get student loans and you can get a hex debt. It's like, why can't they just give us like another 20 grand?
Yeah.
When we're in our-
go on a holiday.
Just to go like traveling the world and like give us a nice interest rate on it. But we'll go and learn about it. We'll have those life experiences.
Wow.
And then we'll come back.
That's
because,
a cool idea.
Because if you didn't- Because that's the other side of it when you're in your early 20s or late teens and you maybe grow up, you know, in a low to middle class family. It's like a lot of the times you haven't been taught the skills and like the values of, all right, go get a part-time job, earn this amount of money, save up for your first holiday, you know, or like there's no way I could go to my like mum and be like, hey, I just need 50, can I just borrow like 15K just to go on a backpacking trip or something like that. Like it wasn't like that situation, but 100%. I wish, like that's probably one of the things, if I had my time again, I wish I did have more of a part-time job and I'd saved up a little bit so I could have gone at least on that backpacking experience. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate though, my sort of travel kicked in maybe in my mid-20s, mm-hmm. especially when I started working in a job that allowed me to travel.
Yep.
So I was able to make it up. But again, it would have been a different experience if it was in the early 20s, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Compared to doing that. But at least it wasn't completely missed in that sense. Whereas that's one of the things that really stands out to me, especially with travel. If you're holding off traveling and it's something that you do have the potential to be able to do, just know that it changes as you get older and you're in a different chapter of life. Like, you won't have the same backpacking experience when you're in your 50s to what you will when you're in your early 20s. Right? Like travel is different. You have to have like, when you get into your 60s and stuff, like I know I'm going to be doing probably more cruises and really relaxed things. Like there won't be much of an itinerary.
Yeah.
It's just going to be hanging out, you know, hopefully with grandkids or something. And then having a 5-hour nap is what I imagine traveling to be. Whereas like in your 20s or 30s, like, all right, well, we've got 15 hours of the day. How many museums can we see?
Yeah. Well, you're going to go quad biking in the jungle.
Yeah.
Right? You're probably going to go bungee jumping.
Do all these things. So,
yeah.
And it's even like when you travel with kids. How different is that experience to that when you're just traveling with your partner or with your friends? It's completely different.
Different.
It's like, oh, there's nap time
it's
now.
It's much higher.
There's 3 hours just wiped out. So, yeah.
Well, I think it you have to say then that the travel when you're young is actually, it's higher quality from an experiential standpoint.
Well, different quality.
Yeah, different quality. Yeah. True. Because it's also higher quality when you get older because you've got more money, right?
Yeah. But
yeah,
it's more around if you want that full gamut of that experience. A lot of it is, I think,
spectrum of experiences
related to timing.
Well, that kind of ties in like what I said at the beginning of the podcast, right? In that it's the meaning of life to me now is I'm here to collect as many different experiences as I can. And you're so right. If I was to do my early 20s again, instead of saving that 10 grand and being so proud of that, going, look at this, you know, this is five figures, right? I should have been collecting way more experiences when I was young.
Yep. And transition to a different point, right?
Okay.
So one of the things that he speaks about, and I love this concept because I've never seen this written in a book, is the notion of experience dividends.
Memory dividends,
yeah, right?
That blew my mind.
That's very cool.
That is very cool.
Because now you can start quantifying it. I think that's one of
Let's explain it because we both know what it is, but no one knows what it is right now. Why am I explaining
it?
You explain it. You brought it up.
Well, I was going to just start talking about
it. No, you explain it.
All right. So, I think the best way that I sort of conceptualized it
was
with finances.
Yep.
We always think about what's this going to return?
Yeah.
So, if you invest in a property, you know that you're going to get equity and it's going to increase in value.
5%, 8%
a year. You get your 8%. We can understand that conceptually that, all right, there's an investment there with money. We put X amount in and then we're going to get some dividend over a period of time.
Another example of that, you put money into the bank, you get X percent interest every year.
And it grows, right? This notion about experience dividends or memory dividends is when you invest into a thing like your dream holiday or that dream 40th birthday or whatever it is, it's going to have compound interest in terms of how much value that experience gives you over a period of time.
Explain.
right? So say, for example, I actually did this as a little bit of an activity.
Okay.
I went back and I had a look at 2015.
Okay.
Right? And I've got like some photos in there and some highlights that every year I do an album of top photos.
Okay.
And I went back and I looked at some of the things that I invested in 2015. I remember that year specifically because I was still working full time. I would have been late 20s at that point. And it was probably when I really wanted to go and explore, like, you know, the next level of my purpose and development and growth as well. So I looked back at those and I made some big calls. So one was I ended up doing a trip to New York and Boston. And during that trip, and I think San Francisco at that time. And during that trip, I was able to do an executive education course at Harvard. I was able to go and watch the NBA finals with the Warriors and see LeBron James and Steph Curry and with one of my best mates, Tom. And then even during that year, I was able to start a burger pop-up with one of my best mates, Joyce, right? So I look at these three or four things and then I go back to those memories and I'm like, they required a fair bit of investment. I had to, like, at that point, I wasn't that financially abundant. So those experiences, like, I remember sitting there, me and Tom, like when we were about to decide to go to the NBA finals and the ticket was quite expensive. And we're sitting there and we're like, wow, like, we've never spent more than $50 on a ticket to anything.
Wow.
And the tickets to this game were about $600 or $700.
Whoa, right? That's 10x.
Dude, and we're sitting there and we're like, oh, my God. And man. I remember we stewed on this thing. Like, we looked at the tickets for 2 days of the trip and we would log in and be like, all right, maybe they'll get cheaper. Maybe somebody will put one up for $100 or something like that. Oh. And then we're sitting there and then we're like, all right, let's just do it. You know, let's just do it. And we still talk about that memory today. And that was nearly 10 years ago.
I mean, even the way you talked about it, you just lit up.
Oh, dude. Like, the game went into overtime. Like, the Warriors won. Like, Steph Curry was, you know, sort of the start of Pete becoming one of the greatest players of all time. Like, LeBron James was one of the best players. Like, I still think back to that. And I can still remember the energy in that building. And I'm like, that is the best, like, probably arguably the best $700 that I've ever spent.
Wow.
Right. And especially in that period of time because of the energy that we had and how we could enjoy it. And then I think back to that executive education course. Like, it was always one of the dreams to go to a university like
Harvard.
Yeah. Like, that was great, right? Like, but I didn't do like a full degree or anything, right? Yeah, I did an exec ed course.
Still, dude.
And that course was on negotiation. And I now think back to the dividends that I got from that investment. And it was a hard call to make, you know, at that point in time to do something like that, to invest those 5 days, because we could have spent those 5 days traveling around, having fun, doing all these things. Well, I was sitting there, like, essentially studying, right? And I look back, that was a negotiation course. And the lessons that I learned in that course are probably what were the foundations of what set up my business, Future Golf. You know, and it really refined the way to approach deal making and a few other things that I'm there. So I look back at that as an experience dividend as well, and what that investment provided me over time. Right. So it's just that concept of these things that we invest in, like whether it's travel, these experiences, sporting events, going to a nice restaurant, you know, hanging out with your friends, they arguably give us more dividends, more compound interest than what a lot of our best financial investments will give us. But the world trains us to focus more on invest your money wisely, invest your finances. The world doesn't really train us.
It doesn't.
To invest in experiences.
And I want to make it really clear for our listeners too, is that I'm sure you've brought up that experience with Tom countless times at dinners when you catch up throughout the years since 2015, right? And that's what Bill means by the dividends keep coming, because that's what we do too, Ali. When I was doing this, I was reflecting on the experiences of just last year, 2023. And one of the big experiences that you and I both invested in is we spent a whole month in the US together traveling. Somehow our wives managed to let us do that. That was ridiculous. And I just remember we keep talking about this one experience that we had. And every time we talk about this, it brings back so many beautiful memories. Do you remember that one night in Chicago where we had 3 car crashes in 5 minutes? Do you remember that?
That was messed up.
That was so crazy. Yeah. There was this one night, we were in Chicago. We went to a comedy club that night. So, we caught an Uber on the way home and it was in the middle of we were in the middle of Chicago. It was one of the dangerous, most dangerous places in Chicago. And we were in our Uber. Then all of a sudden, the car behind us rammed us. And we're like, oh my God, what happened? And this guy, he was talking about how his car was brand new and he was loving his car. He's like, gosh, did you see the leather? Do you smell the leather? And then the guy rams him. He runs out to the back. He's pissed. He's yelling out the guys. Me, you, and Craig are sitting in the back thinking, oh no, something's about to go down. And the people in the car in the back are going to think we're friends with this guy.
We're not a name. We're just Uber passengers.
We're not his friends. Yeah, we don't know him. No, we're not. He starts getting really angry. As he comes back to his car to get his phone to like take photos of their license plate, the car behind us rams us again. It rams us again. And then the guy's like, what the F? He runs to the back, starts like hitting their window. We're thinking we're going to get shot. We're going to die. And anyway, it was one of the most crazy nights because they end up hitting the guy again. So we actually just got out of the Uber and walked off. But anyway.
In the middle of like nowhere. We were like in like an industrial area. Like it was
dark. It was late. But anyway. We've talked about that memory, I reckon, 20 times. Yeah. And every time we talk about it, me, you, and Craig laugh our asses off.
It's funny now that we survived.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's just an example of how, and I'm sure as our listeners listen to this, you've done the same thing. Mm-hmm. You've sat around with your friends and you've talked about one particular memory over and over and over and over again. Yeah. That's a memory dividend.
Yeah.
That right there is a memory dividend.
For sure.
And I just wanted to make that super clear because I think when I first came across this and I was like, what the hell is a memory dividend? I'd much rather a S&P 500 dividend than a memory dividend.
Yeah.
But now I actually understand. I actually really value memory dividends. Well,
and you especially as a storyteller, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've made a career off these memories and turning them into stories.
Dude, I didn't think about it like that. Right? The number of times I told them, what the hell you want to be to Harry Potter? That was a memory dividend that keeps paying me every time I tell it.
That's generations. That one story is going to set up your grandkids.
Wow. Oh, man, I've never thought about that. That's actually hilarious.
And just as you were talking about that too, how often do we talk about, hey, that payment we received? And then we put it into the mortgage. Like as much as that's important.
Do you remember that dividend Microsoft paid me?
Yeah.
Do you remember that dividend?
Yeah.
No one talks about that.
Remember that 4% pay rise you got?
Yeah.
And then you just let it just absorb into your bank account?
That investment property that grew by 1.6% that year?
Yeah. It's like...
Wow. Yeah.
I'll tell you this story as well. Like, it just reminds me. So, in Australia, we have a thing called superannuation.
Yeah.
Right. And I know it doesn't exist in all countries, but essentially what happens is automatically your employer puts away 10% of your salary into an account for you that gets invested. And then the idea is over time. It's your retirement fund.
Yeah.
And it should be there. And I remember being 20 and my first job was at a university. And in Australia, the universities have a special arrangement where you get 17% on your super.
Ridiculous.
Right. And then they were doing this thing where you'd get 17% and then they would give you like an automatic, an additional 7%. So you're getting like 24% that go into this account. But I was 20 and then I'd look at my pay slip and I would see this amount, which is like 24% of my salary going in to this thing called superannuation. So I'm like, all right, well, what is this superannuation? They're going to call up. And they're like, oh yeah, you'll get all of this when you're 65. I'm like, 65, I'm 20. That's like in 165 years. Like, I'm like, what I need right now is I need money for beers, right? So like that amount there, that's about 14 to 25 beers like that week that's now just going into this thing that I'm never, ever going to use.
Yeah.
So I tried calling up and I tried to negotiate down. I'm like, how about we just put the 10%, what everyone gets, and I get the other 14 and you just put that into my paycheck so I can like, you know, buy a CD or some shit. And I think I look back on that. If that accepted my negotiation, now just even call it 15 years later, that one move may have cost my kids something close to a small house.
Yeah.
Right? Like just changing that one idea and not understanding what that decision was.
Well, that kind of shows the power of compounding.
Absolutely, it does.
And what we're saying here is, that kind of compounding also happens with memories that you invest in if you're young. Yeah. So what this really means then, Ali, is that you need to invest in experiences really young. Yeah. Because the younger you invest in these memorable experiences, the longer these investments will pay dividends to in your life. Mm-hmm. For example, if you wait till you're 60 to do this massive trip that you want to do, and let's say you die at 80, you're only going to get dividends for 20 years. Unfortunately. Whereas if you invested in these great experiences when you're 20 and you die at 80, that means you've got 60 years worth of dividends that you're going to benefit from that investment in that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Never thought about it like that either.
And I think there's a mixture here, right? There's a mixture of, all right, well, what's the memory or the experience that I want to create in the short term? Like, what's that story type of highlight?
Yeah.
You know, the going to the sporting event or eating at your dream restaurant or whatever it is, getting married, you know, whatever that's going to be. It's like, what's that? But then what are also like the superannuation equivalents that we need to do in experiences too? Because it got me thinking about it.
I like that.
Right? Like, because there's going to be some things to enjoy all these different experiences and different chapters in our life.
Mm-hmm.
We do need to make some longer term decisions for ourselves, whether it's around health, whether it's around habits, whether it's around the way that we program ourselves and our beliefs, because that also impacts our ability to enjoy these experiences. Right? Like, you can sit there and have the greatest experience on paper in your life. But if you're feeling really average or you're experiencing some, you know, difficulties or conflict or you've got all this pressure, that experience won't be as amazing as what it could be.
Yeah.
So it's like there's nearly a balance there of making sure that, like, the, you know, we always use this term, our internal operating system is also primed in terms of being able to enjoy that experience as much as we can.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think if you could have the best experience, but if you're not in a good place psychologically, how good is the experience?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, when you're going on a holiday and you get sick, that ruins the holiday.
Yeah,
it just goes to show again: mental health, physical health, all important components.
State of mind, all these things are really important.
But again, let's round out that point on memory dividends.
Yeah,
I think it's memory dividends are real. And the earlier you invest in great memories, the longer these dividends pay for, the longer these dividends pay out. And that's why I said to you, I truly now realize I regret in my early 20s not having invested in more memorable moments. Most of my memorable moments that I can think of are around my late 20s, early 30s. I don't have many memorable moments at all, even in my teens. It's mostly in my late 20s to early 30s.
And I think a cool practical application of this is using the concept of experience points.
Okay.
Right? So sitting there and maybe having a target of, okay, in the next 12 months, I want to have 1,000 experience points. And then allocating what that needs to look like in terms of real life experiences.
Right.
So say, for example, you might have, okay, I want to play with my kids for an hour every day. You might give that 10 points or 5 points and then just scaling them up. I want to go to the gym 2 times a week. You might give that 5 or 10 points and then you might have some big bolder ones. It's like, okay, I want to start my own business.
Yeah.
I want to do a course somewhere. I want to go on a trip that might unlock 100 points. And then be like, okay, well, what's my pathway to getting to, say, 1,000 points? How do I then score that in alignment with the experiences that
I've
had?
You mean
that
over a year?
Over a year. Okay. That could be a cool sort of exercise. And then going back in 5 years' time and then seeing how did those points actually enhance over the next 5 years? Like those decisions that you made, and there might be some that didn't really impact you at all. You thought it was going to be something that you invested time, energy, and money in, but maybe at the time you thought it would be 15 points. In 3 years' time, it's still 15 points, or it went down to 10 points, right? But there'll be a few things there that maybe you're like, that was 100 points then, but now it's actually 10,000 points now because it just unlocked all these other amazing things.
That's a great way to think about it because it helps you make it pragmatic.
Quantify it,
yeah. It helps you quantify it, and it helps you think in terms of experiences, not just financial return on investment.
And we could link this to even what we do in Recalibrate, which is memorable moments.
Yeah.
So we already have an exercise like that where you break down, okay, what are the moments that lit us up in alignment with who we
and
are?
What do you want more of?
And what do you want more of?
Yeah.
But allocating this next layer of experience points too allows you to quantify it a little bit more as well.
Well, you know what's interesting? While you're saying that, it makes me think. I look at my portfolio of investments every year and I always sit down with Paywen and I kind of look at it, my wife, and we go, that's a little bit disappointing, isn't it? This this investment here didn't really perform.
Lost 8%.
You know, well, normally it does 8%, but this year kind of did 6%. That's a bit disappointing. Yeah. Look at that investment over there. That was flying. Look at this one over here. That's a bit disappointing. That normally does 12%. Now it's down to 4%. We never do that with life experiences. When do you sit down and look at your portfolio of experiences of the last year and go, Hey, you know the date nights, that's been dropping in ROI, hasn't it? Hey, look at the time traveling with the kids to a new country exploring. That's really taken a dive, hasn't it? Yeah. We never do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting because it's
mortgage
it's,
payments are up. Yeah, that's great.
That experience has been very constant over the years. But it's interesting in that we don't look at collecting life experiences and also auditing that in a way that, hey, we really need to work on this particular area of life and get the return back up again.
Yeah.
We don't think about it like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even scoring and ranking the way that the simplest ways, in terms of the money that you spent, how much of that's actually linked to these cool experiences?
Yeah.
And do you need to adjust that level a little bit? It's a cool way to audit it.
Well, you know, I think if, you know, that question that people always ask at Q&A sessions where they're like, what advice would you give your younger self?
Yeah.
I think definitely one of the things I'd give my younger self just to, as we wrap up this kind of component of the book, part of the book is, I would say to myself, invest financially as early as you can. Yeah. Start as early as you can so you can benefit from that compounding interest.
Yeah.
And at the same time, invest in experiences as early as you can so you can benefit from that compounding interest, that the dividends that pay out every year. Because I also think that's directly linked to how you think about yourself. Imagine you're that person that, sure, you invest a part of your money early, but then you also invested into traveling around Europe, doing that backpacking trip. You also went to Asia and did backpacking there. That will completely change how you view yourself. As opposed to the way I viewed myself growing up was, yeah, I just did my homework. I just studied and I went to Vietnamese school on Saturdays and did math school on Sundays. And so my self-perception was not great. You know, I wasn't the adventurer. I wasn't the risk taker. I wasn't the dreamer. I was just a studious, obedient Asian kid. Whereas I had friends who were traveling and they were confident, man. The way they show up at school was different. They spoke with more excitement. They had more charisma. They were wiser. They were more well-traveled. They were sensitive when they spoke to different people from different cultures. I had none of that. So I think far out, invest early in financial vehicles, but also the memory vehicle and create memorable moments for yourself. Far out. That's...
For sure.
This book has definitely made me more wise to the way I'm going to guide my kids, man.
Especially when you're younger. For most people, they have a lot of time and they have a lot of good quality energy.
Oh, right? Such good quality. Right. But you got no money.
But you have to work with that, right? And the way that I think you work with that is you do things that are free, but still really fun. You do things that are low cost.
Yeah.
Right?
Camping.
You go camping.
You need an $80 tent, $50 tent. Right. You can go camp anywhere.
Use the leverage of that time and energy.
Absolutely. Because
that's the beauty. When you have more time and energy, you can make simple things really exciting and awesome.
Man, right? You can jump in a car with a bunch of your mates, get a tent, go camping for 3-4 weeks.
It's still going to be amazing.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's what we think back on. If you think about, I don't know if you're the same, but I think back on my memories with my friends when I was younger.
I don't have any.
Friends?
Not, well.
Memories.
Both.
That's a whole different episode, bro.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like giving you a hug right now.
When I was young, I didn't have many friends and I didn't have many memories. Yeah. But I won't take away from your wonderful bucket of memories. Go share them.
Well, now you at least have one friend, right? I'm your friend. Yeah. That's good. So you've increased that. That's great. I think it was...
What memories do you have to share?
I was lucky because I grew up with such an amazing group of friends.
Yeah.
And we pretty much lived with each other. We lived in a small town out in Melbourne and it was like really growing up in a country town. So I've got all these amazing memories. Like I remember we would like walk 2-3 hours to these house parties when we were like 14, 15 years old and we'd go on these awesome treks and a lot of the times we weren't even invited in these parties and we'd be sneaking, jumping over fences and doing all sorts of crap. And you'd have like all these little adventures. Like still remember like there was a bakery that we'd stop by on the way back at 4 a.m. every time we'd go to one of these parties. We'd have a backpack on and the guy would like open up the bakery and give us a couple of pies and then we'd walk back. Like just insane. Like you're going camping. Going to like one of my good friends used to have a holiday house near the beach. So we'd head down there every New Year's and we'd spend 2 weeks down there. Like so many rich memories of just connecting. And these things didn't cost us much. Yeah. You know, they were like $5, $10 experiences. But those things still compound so heavily moving forward.
Wow. But that's important. Yeah. That's an important point you just made, is that you can gain so many memories which will give you dividends, and it doesn't have to cost you $10,000, $5,000. It can cost $100, $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can actually be creative here to create these memories.
So one of the cool unlocks there is people can amplify the lack of financial resource required for memories. Because if you do simple things with amazing people...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It probably trumps it. Right?
Oh, 100%.
So maybe there's like some sort of intersection here. It's like if you have no people, then you need to spend lots of money on really cool experiences.
Yeah, I had money. I just had no one to spend it with. And it was, bro, it was like seeing the way you light up when you were talking about walking for 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's made me feel really sad. See, and
I could do that now. Like if I walk for 4 hours, I need to recover for 7 weeks.
You'd tear your car.
Yeah, that was...
But that's so true. I mean, and I think now we're speaking to the young people, right? Yeah. The young people is, hey, just get out there. Get fill up that memory bank, right? Invest in lots of memories that don't cost you a lot. Because also when you're young, you've got nothing to lose. Yeah. You know what I have to lose now? An 8-week-old kid. I could, like, Melody could just, like, be lost somewhere and I don't know where she is, right? Like, it's
more
like,
risk.
You have a lot more to lose here. I've got a, you know, 7-year-old now, Xander, who runs all over the place. I could lose the kid. Whereas when you are in your early 20s, you've got nothing to lose.
You can go on.
What are you going to lose?
Take more risks.
Take more risks. You can
go on more adventures.
Go on more adventures, 100%. So back to what I was saying before is that I would definitely give that advice to my younger self now. Mm-hmm. Is, man, you're young. Mm-hmm. Forget about trying to make that extra $1,000.
Yeah.
Go and spend that $1,000 and create incredible experiences with the friends that you have. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about, man. And look... Well, let's get to the core of the book now. Yeah. The core of the book, I mean, the title of the book is Die With Zero, right? It means aim to die with no money left. That's what it's saying.
Yeah.
Whereas that is totally not how I'm conditioned.
Yeah.
I'm conditioned to die with a castle full of gold. Like that is 100% my mindset, is collect as much gold as you can in this life while you're alive and die rich.
Yeah.
Whereas this is die... poor.
Mm.
Wow, that is radical, man. That is a radical
jump
shift.
Into it.
All right. Well, look, I think that one of the main reasons why I think die with a castle full of gold, die rich, is because I have become addicted to making money.
Mm-hmm.
I've become so drawn to that, addicted to that. It's become a habit now. It's come from the roots of being... poor when I was growing up, not having much money growing up, not having many options. Because of that experience, it's turned me into this machine now that just keeps thinking, how do I maximize ROI with investments? How do I maximize money with the time? How do I... And it's just... I don't know. It's made me more focused on making money than I am using the money to create experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's also another side to this, just from knowing you really well. Yeah. I don't know if you're fully driven by making money. I think the big thing is, you said it before, I think you really want to look after a lot of people around you in your life.
Well, that's why I want to die with a castle full of gold.
That's right.
All the people in the castle are looked after forever.
Because you're nearly painting this picture that you're just driven by like,
it's all like the dollar and everything you do.
Because that's not really the case. Like you actually do it in quite a holistic way. You know, like there's a very, I think there's a whole other level of people that are just obsessed with money and the acquisition of it. I don't know if you
fall
in that box.
Well, I want to serve my kingdom.
That's right.
I want to die with the gold to serve my kingdom.
You want to make sure that everyone in your, kingdom and community
are
kind of looked after based on the time and energy that you can put in
and the value
that you can extract from that.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a little bit different than I think...
Yeah, I slightly painted myself as Mr. Burns there.
A little bit like, Mr. Burns or Scrooge McDuck a little bit that's not really the case. So I just want to put that...
Yeah, yeah.
repaint that image that you were giving out.
Money.
No. Like, you're like the most generous person I know. Like, you pretty much like... whatever you earn, you light it on fire with those that you love. So I think that you already do play in that space, but continue.
Thank you for that. You colored it a little bit with love. So thank you. But that's the thing, man. I do that at the expense of not creating more memories, probably for myself.
Yeah.
you know, and now I'm swinging it the other way and I'm turning a little Mother Teresa-y. But it's like I kind of do it at that expense, at my own expense.
Yeah.
And that's why I said this book was medicine for me, Ali, is that I don't think about collecting experiences sometimes for myself. It's why, Ali, I've never been to a music concert. Mm. You know, that always blows your mind and you laugh. You're like, how have you not been to a music concert? I've never been to a music concert. I've never been to a live comedy show until you took me to Dave Chappelle. I've never been to a live sporting event until I went to a hockey game with you in the US and I had to go to a basketball game with one of my friends. I was like, why would you go to this thing? And then while I was there, I was like, defense. I was like, what is this feeling? Why am I yelling this? I don't even know what this means. And I was so excited in the game and I was like trying to get a shirt when they shot the shirt cannon. And I'm like, I could easily buy a $20 shirt. Why am I so wanting to get that shirt?
Yeah.
And I went, wow. So this is why people go to sporting events. A hot dog has never tasted better than when I went to a basketball game.
Yeah.
Right? And it was way too expensive.
Yeah.
But it was so yummy.
Yeah.
And I don't have those experiences. Like I've been to what? 2 sporting games. Still haven't been to a music concert. 1 big live comedy show.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why I don't have experiences like that in my life is because my whole life, my parents have always said, we are breaking our backs, working 2 jobs, 7 days a week, so you can have a better future. So my operating system is, you need to work 7 days a week, work hard as you can, invest as smart as you can, so your children can have better lives. Mm. That's my DNA, bro.
Yeah.
Right? And And thank you for saying that because that's very kind of you to say that I live for others because I do, man. I'm here to serve my family and serve the people I love and you're included in that. So I always think to myself, how do I serve the people in my circle better? Well, you work and you optimize your finances as much as you possibly can so that you are worthy. So that once you die, you've served your purpose. Mm. I've never had my own personal... Mm. I never thought about myself.
You've been building that slowly over the last like 5-6 years.
But I've gotten so
you were like 100% on. Yeah, just like
when we
a service vehicle.
Yeah. I'm just here for others. It's kind of like that martyr.
Yeah,
I was kind of like that, and I can tell you now that I was already starting to get a little bit bitter with that.
Yeah,
because when you go too far, when you're like, it's like that. Do you remember Shannon Noll?
Yeah.
What about me? Yeah. It isn't fair.
The Americans are going to
They're going to Google this
and be like, what was that? Singer. What just happened? Why did he start singing this?
No, it's a really sad song where he just sings like, you know, what about me?
Oh, Shannon Noll got to mention.
That's it's kind of turned into a weird therapy session, but it's I've learned that in order to live for others, I have to actually live for me.
Mm.
And that's been such a big unlock, dude. Because I used to think, if I want to be the best father, I need to sacrifice everything for my kids. And it's taken me all my life to learn that. No. If you want to be the best dad, the best husband, the best friend, you need to look after yourself. Yeah. So easy to say, so hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only, like you said, started looking after myself in the last 4 to 5 years.
Yep. And definitely our upbringing shapes us in that sense. Like I remember, I grew up as an only child, and a big thing that shaped me was just my dad being an alcoholic, and being in an environment as an only child, and wanting to, kind of, it was like you were always looking out the window, you know. It was a very different environment around. Hey, one day I'm going to be out of here, right? And then there's this whole world out there waiting, and when I get the chance, I want to go and experience all of it. Or as much of it as I can that's in alignment with who I am. And that was always the quest. You know, I viewed it from a very young age as that life's nearly a video game and there's all these different levels and worlds and you got to go and explore them. But I'm like, damn, man, like I'm living a life right now where I just can't get access into that door at all. Right? Because I didn't have the big family or I didn't have that sort of, like, you've got so many cousins, you got siblings, you got like broad, like huge families on both sides. For me, I was more on the idea of nearly a lone ranger, right? Like it was me and my mum and that was pretty much it. Mm. And I'm like, outside of that, I'm like, there's this whole world out there that I need to go explore. Like I need to build my own family. I need to build that friendship group. I need to go and find where home really is and unearth it. So it was a very different thing. And I think that's why I lean so heavily to experiences more than the other side, because it wasn't really inbuilt in me that you had to build for the future that much. Mm. You know, my sort of values that I was given is like everything was short term. Everything was in the moment. So I actually had to build the other way and make more of those longer term decisions as I got a little bit older and learned those frameworks a bit more. So it's quite opposite to probably where you were. Like, you're already thinking about the future, like you said before.
I was so future focused.
You had, like, you had actually got to a point where you had some wealth. You were working hard. You were working all these jobs and you were saving for that. I was living week to week at that point.
So and you were dying with zero.
I was at that point.
Yeah.
But I wasn't actually setting up the foundations as well to then unlock all those other worlds that I needed, that I really wanted to explore.
Right.
And that shaped a lot of my decisions, you know, especially around the people that I surrounded myself with. Mm. I was like, I want to make sure that I'm surrounding myself with people that are going to help me unlock these experiences, you know, like whether it was my wife, it was my friends, you know, yourself, people that I hang out with. It was always in that chapter of life, who is like going to be the most fun to have these experiences with, or who am I going to learn the most from? And what adventures can we then go on? And that's always been a pretty core part of it. And then it was places. It was like, you know, even now, like I've got such a desire. Like we were talking about this the other night. Like I get FOMO bad, especially with experiences. Like if there's if there's a sporting event or something like that, I want to go to that thing.
Did you want to tell everyone what you did in Paris? What did you do?
In Paris?
What you booked for Paris?
Oh, I haven't even told Chantel that. But yeah, I may have just purchased some Olympics tickets.
Paris.
I'm not even sure if I'm going yet.
Yeah, you're not sure if you can go or not, which is outrageous.
Yeah, I have like this bad habit of buying tickets to things and then forgetting about them.
You bought a ticket to Blink-182 for a concert in Adelaide for one person. And then the day came, you're like, oh, damn it, I can't even go to this.
Yeah, so I gave it to Craig.
Gave it to Craig. And then Craig went and had a great time.
It happens a lot.
But that's so funny how you get so much of the FOMO. So I think you are actually someone who, like, Die With Zero is very aligned with you because- You have that habit.
Yeah.
You already are investing in lots of experiences.
If there's something going on at that time that I view that's like a really aligned experience, I'll lean towards trying to experience it. You know? And I've figured out a way to make it so it's not that detriment. Like, it's not around making bad choices, you know, and being like, all right, I'm just going to succumb to every desire or whatever it is. It's more around, all right, well, in these parameters, it's usually like sporting events, concerts, places to visit, landmarks, you know, they're kind of things that I really want to lean towards. And I'll go pretty hard on investing and making time and space for those experiences.
There's a voice in my head right now. Yeah. And this voice kept coming up while I was reading the book, especially when I was thinking about Die With Zero, how to spend all your money before you die. There's this voice in my head that kept coming up and it was like, what about the kids?
Yeah.
You selfish monster. And that voice is kind of in my head right now, right? It's like, as we're talking about this, it's like, what about the kids? And I can hear the listeners' voices. It's coming too. Yeah. They're like, what about the kids, you monsters, right? Yeah. You selfish bastards.
Yeah.
And the way that Bill talks about it was fantastic. It's like, well, think about this. How much do you actually want to leave the kids? What, do you want to leave them $1 billion?
Yeah.
How much do you want to leave them? And I've can look at the world right now and most really, really wealthy families who leave their children a bunch of money, you end up just ruining their lives if you give them too much. There is such thing as too much because that just robs them of all their desire to create wealth themselves. Yeah. It's like, leave them some mountain so they can still climb, damn it, right?
And if you taught them how to manage it when you leave it to them too.
Well, then, that's another important point, isn't it? Yeah. The point I was getting at is work out how much you want to give them, okay? So say you want to give them 10% of your wealth.
Yeah.
Great. The other 90%, use all of it before you die. I never thought about it like that because I think my mind and the voice in my head was, I just stopped there of, what about the kids, you selfish person? And then that immediately, the response was, oh, I'll give the kids everything. Whereas I thought, no. I'll probably give the kids, 10, 20%. You'll get that. And that's going to be enough there to be a safety blanket for you so you can go and take some risks and really try finding what you're really passionate about in life and et cetera. But then the other 80%, it's now completely changed the way I thought. Maybe I'll give a certain percent of that to charity as well, the things I really truly care about. And then the rest that's left, maybe 60, 50%, I'm going to light that.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that. Enjoy. I'm going to use it and enjoy it. Never thought about life like that, bro.
Yep.
Never thought about life like that. And then that actually got me excited about life again. Right? Because I think I think it's not that I completely wasn't excited about life, but it's more I love what I do with work. So my life is already exciting. But when I started thinking like this, it got me even more excited about this life. Because let's say that I got 50% of my wealth that I'm going to use on me, just for me in my life. The reason it got me excited is because I immediately acted on it. So Peiwen's 40th is coming up, right? And I said, Peiwen, for your 40th, let's do something wild. Let's go create that memory that we're going to get dividends from for the rest of our lives. And so we initially planned a trip to the Gold Coast. We're like, all right, let's do a trip to the Gold Coast for a week. That's wild. Yeah. And I said, that's not wild. Yeah. Let's go overseas. Overseas is wild. And she goes, okay, well, yeah, that's a bit excessive. I'm like, no, not with this new die with zero mindset. We're gonna live with zero. Yeah. And then I said to her, well, what about bring our friends? So now my cousins, Fung and Dan, are coming. I was like, what about more of them? So now we're bringing my cousins from Hong Kong as well. And that has brought me a level of excitement. It hasn't even happened yet. But that memory we're about to create has already created dividends. What kind of investment can you invest in that before you even put the money into it, it's already giving you dividends?
Even excitement dividends.
Last night you saw us on a call with my cousins from Hong Kong and we're letting them know that we want to, you know, get them tickets for them to come along. Yeah. They're excited. We're excited. We were like buzzing with joy.
Yeah.
Dude, like that. Yeah. I've never felt that level of excitement and joy. Mm-hmm. And that's the call out that dividends get paid on these investments before you've even made the investment. Mm-hmm. I've never felt that in my life. It's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah. And I no longer feel selfish about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I can tell you before this book, I used to feel selfish when I would do things like this.
But again, he's got a great framework of how to even calculate this notion of dying with zero. Right? So he uses a formula and it's a little bit more complex, but the high level of it is the equation is 0.70, which is 70%, times the amount of money that you think you need to live the life that you want to live over a year. So it might be $100,000 or $200,000 or $50,000 or $500,000, whatever your number is, times by the number of years that you have left.
To live,
right? And you can estimate that just around 80 or 85 years. Mm-hmm. So if you do that equation, you'll actually know what the number is or your ideal number might be that you need to acquire to live the life that you want to live, to actually die with zero and then spending it at that level as well. And then you can just put on top the number that you then want for your kids or those that you love or causes that you care about. So you can get really specific around the actual numbers that you're aiming for, because that's one of the tricky things when we're working or we're running businesses. It's like, when do you actually stop? At what point is enough enough? Right? And a lot of the times you get addicted to it.
Yeah, you do. Like I said, you get addicted to it.
For sure. And there's all these stories about people that are like, oh, I probably worked 60-hour weeks for 20 years too long. Like, there's probably a period in time where you do have to work them.
That's heavy, man.
Right? But then there's a lot of, I think, people that have that regret.
Well, it's one of the biggest regrets of the dying is, I wish I didn't work so much.
Right? And maybe if you had clarity around what that number was. And for a lot of those people, often they're very high performers. And they might end up with 10 million or 50 million or whatever it is. But it's like, it's so much money that them and even other generations of their family can never spend. Mm. Whereas you mentioned before, this money gets given, passed on, and it's not even utilized because the prep, again, that next level of thinking about what I'm then going to do. It's a bit like winning the lotto for a lot of people as well. And they just don't know what to then do when they're given this big lump sum as well.
On the topic of inheritance, the average age that people get their inheritance is in their 60s.
It's crazy.
So when you think about it, right? Yeah. Let's say that you leave your kids an inheritance of, I'm just random, let's say, I don't know, 250 grand.
Yeah.
Giving your kids that money, 250 grand, when you're in your 60s, I don't think it's very valuable.
Yeah.
Not if you compare it to
if they're in their 60s, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, when the kids are in their 60s.
That's right. They'll get
it. What I'm saying is, the average
if you live to 85,
you're going to give your kids their inheritance when they're in their 60s, right? Yeah. So that's not as valuable to a 60-year-old, because if you give a 60-year-old 250 grand, then we're like, oh, cool, yeah. Thank you. That's lovely. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
I'll give that to my kids.
Super generous. Yeah, I'll give it to my kids.
Right? When they're 60.
Yeah, when they're 60, because I'm not going to die for another 40 years, 30 years, right? But here's the thing. The optimal time to give your children money is between the ages of 25 and 35. Mm-hmm. That also blew my mind because I just recently did my will. Yeah. So I just did my will and thought about who I'm going to give money to and think assets to and everything. Yeah. And it just made me reevaluate the entire process. Yeah. It's like, no. 250 grand, when you're in your early 30s, that's the difference between I'm renting or I'm buying a family home.
Yeah.
That's the difference between, hey, we get to go on a big family vacation that we're going to remember for the rest of our lives versus we're just going to go down to the local park or something, right? Like, it's a drastic difference. Mm. So it just completely changed the way I thought about inheritance and when to give the kids money, when to give them the support. And he's got these three R's where he says, you shouldn't do that because that means you're giving random amounts of money to random people at random times. Yeah. And then random people because depending on your inheritance list and how you do it. You know, if you die and then unfortunately your kids are no longer around, then it just goes to random people.
Yeah.
So far out, instead of
You don't get to enjoy it. You don't get to see them.
And you don't get to see them enjoy it. Yes.
You don't get that moment. Like it happens when you're gone.
Imagine when you get to see your kids use part of that money in their late 20s to start a business. Yeah. And maybe they don't succeed, but you see who they grow into as a result of going through those challenges.
Yeah.
I mean, man, that is infinitely more valuable.
And a lot of that is also based around people not having clarity on how much they actually need.
Yeah.
Right? So they hold off until the day they die because they're like, I don't actually know what I need and how long I'm going to live for. So how do I know what to then give to people?
Yeah.
Right? And 100%. Like I was speaking to somebody recently who was really high up at like KPMG and there was a study and it was something like just in Australia alone. Mm. There's a pipeline. I can't even remember the number. It was ridiculous. It's like $13 trillion or like $23 trillion of assets that are coming down the inheritance pipeline.
$23 trillion.
Yeah, it's insane. Like over the next 10 years, 10 to 15 years. Because in Australia especially, it's all the baby boomers that bought properties really, really cheap and invested and superannuation kicked in, 30, 40 years ago, 20, whenever it was in Australia. Mm-hmm. So they've got huge superannuation portfolios, huge property portfolios, and then they're passing that down to their kids. But then the average age that these kids are going to get it at is going to be about 67. So this concept's 63 to 67, somewhere around there, right? But and then this concept is actually now having, like people actually advising now to, it's like called like pre-heritance or something was the term that he mentioned. And then they're starting to actually give away parts of their portfolio a little bit earlier, to their kids and their grandkids and that, so they can then enjoy it. And I think it's a really cool concept.
One of the examples in the book that Bill talked about was a mother, a single mother, that got the inheritance when she was in her 60s. Yeah. And then she was saying to, like, it's just a case study where he was saying that 200 grand would have been way more useful when she was struggling as a single mum in her mid-30s.
That's right.
Struggling to make ends meet. Yeah. But the parents didn't give it to her then. They waited till they died, which by that point, she no longer needed the money. Look, having the money is nice, but having it when you're a single mum in your early 30s, that would have been way more beneficial for that particular case study that he was sharing, right? So it just radically changed the way I thought about when am I going to give my kids money? Mm. When am I going to support them? Because really, man, one of the greatest things my dad ever did was when I was in my mid-20s, he was my financial net, where he said, you know what? You know that magic business you want to do? Mm. Go give it a crack.
Yeah.
Right? You know that business you want to do was selling electronics and going to the Canton Fair in China, buying a container of electronics back to Australia and selling at the Sunday markets? Go do it. Those experiences shaped me, made me. So my dad used money early to invest in my character, to invest in my entrepreneurial mind and literally shape the person that I've gradually become. Whereas he could have not given me any of that money and waited till he passed away to give me the money. Like even now, if my dad gave me money, it's not as beneficial as him giving it to me in my mid-20s.
It's full on. I'll share this story as well. Like my dad passed away when I was 25, 26, right? We didn't really have much of a relationship for 10 years and he was living in like commission housing and hadn't worked in a long time. And then when he passed away, like, I just got given a little bag of his belongings, right? So I know we've spoken about it before. Like, there was one was a brown folder with a business idea that inspired sort of the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
The other part of that, and we only found it later on, it was linked towards, at a similar time, Chantal and I, we were looking at having kids, right? So we had some difficulties in that space, and IVF had to be one of the options. But we're sort of like, I was like 25, 26 at the time. We weren't really financially set up that well. IVF at that time was like $10,000-$15,000, which we just didn't have. You know, we're renting a house or just sort of getting through, you know, paying bills, doing all of that. And then I remember looking into that bag of belongings, and I found this one letter because he had no real inheritance, right? Like, because he hadn't worked in so long. He was living in commission housing. But then there was this one letter, and I just sort of looked through the bag, and it was him trying to cancel one of his superannuation accounts. So in Australia, when you have superannuation, you also sometimes get a component of life insurance.
Right.
Right? So he tried to cancel it, but then they needed the identification or something. And he didn't – I'm like, maybe he didn't send the ID to cancel it.
So you couldn't cancel it.
So he didn't cancel it. So then I called him up, and he had like $67 in there in the account. So it was still active. But with that, he had one quarter off an allocation of life insurance, which was about $17,500.
Wow.
Right. So I found this letter, followed the rabbit hole a little bit.
And $16 like, plus $17,000.
It was like $64, right? $64. Yeah, because once the account isn't active, you no longer have an account. Right. And then the life insurance component's gone. But at the time that he passed, he still had like $67 in the account. So the account was still active because he didn't.
Oh,
so he wanted to get like the $67.
Wow. Right.
And then he had to send his license or whatever and just didn't get around that's to it or whatever. Couldn't be bothered. Yeah. Right. He's like, it's not worth it. Right. That ended up giving me an inheritance of $17,000 at that time.
And $67.
And that paid for the IVF.
Wow.
That then led to our first child. Right. So I got that inheritance in my 20s, even though it wasn't a massive amount, but it dramatically changed our life.
And it led you to having.
That's right. It led us to having our kids. And maybe if we didn't have that at that point in time, it's like 2-3 years. Maybe we would have waited a little bit longer. We would have gone down a different.
It wouldn't be Marcel. It'd be somebody else.
It'd be something else.
It wouldn't be actually the boy you have right now.
But that was like a gift that we were given without even really. You know,
as compared to.
Yeah.
If I gave you $17,000 today, is it as impactful?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. Still good.
Still great. Still nice to have. But it's different timing, right?
Well, that was the difference between having a child and no child. Now it's the difference between do I get a nicer car?
Yeah.
Or do I get a
absolutely
little less nicer car?
Yeah.
That is full on.
That is crazy.
But again, like I'm saying, that this has completely changed the way I think about when I'm giving my kids money. How am I giving my kids money? What am I going to encourage my kids to spend the money that I give them on? Right? It's what a radical shift. Because if I didn't read this book, I can tell you right now, if this book didn't cross my path and didn't create the operating system upgrade in my brain right now, I would have been the classic parent that when I die, I'm going to give you. I don't know why I'm Texan all of a sudden when I get older, but I'm going to give you the money.
That's cool if you had that accent.
Yeah, it'd be actually quite cool if I was an Asian Australian with the Texan accent.
Yeah.
But I would have been that old man that would have said-
It sounded a bit like Bane there too as well. Sort of,
Bane. Yeah, then I would have given my kids random amount of money at a random period of time in their life, and it wouldn't be as valuable to them. And then that's the sad part, Ali, because imagine you traded all of your time effort into the life energy that we call money. Like that, you're actually losing life to turn it into money. And then you're giving it randomly at a random time for no particular reason.
For sure.
There was another story in there that it reminded me of before we jump to this kind of next point in the book. But another story that it reminded me of is Bill gave his grandmother $10,000. Do you remember this story?
Remind me.
Okay. So what happened was he wanted to do something really generous at this point in his life. So he decided to give his grandmother $10,000 and he goes, Grandma, here's $10,000. Go live. Okay. And he was so excited to see what she did with it. She didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
Because at that point in her life, she was so old and frail already. She couldn't spend it on travel.
Yeah.
So he goes, he found out that she just gave it to the grandkids.
Yeah.
And he wanted her to enjoy that life energy. But at that point in her life, she was too old already. So she just didn't do anything with it.
It seems like a very common curve as well. Like once you head into your 60s, 70s, 80s, you get to a point of like, I know enough now.
Yeah.
So I don't actually need to spend that much at that point. So if you've got it in your mindset that I'm just going to start spending up big,
yeah,
you know, you're not going to buy a Ferrari when you're 75, most likely.
What, do you know what
or even
sad,
if you do.
Do you know what the sad thing is? I feel a little bit mean saying this.
Yeah.
But I recently saw a picture of a Ferrari meetup.
Yeah.
And everyone in the photo was like in their late 60s.
Yeah.
Like everyone had really white hair. Yeah. And I've seen someone get out of a really fancy car and it looked really painful.
But maybe that is also, maybe for them, that is the fun thing that you do when you're in your 60s.
Yeah, I guess so. But again, but that's not done with zero.
But it would be more fun if you had it in your 40s. I don't know.
I think so. When you can get in and out of it more easily.
But then again, if you bought a Ferrari in your 40s, are you going to sacrifice experiences?
Well, I think maybe in your 80s, that's when you get the Camry.
Yeah, okay.
Way more comfortable, right? That's when you get the Kia Carnival. Kia Carnival, one of the greatest cars ever. Maybe in your
80s, it's safer to just get a driver if you can.
Just get an Uber.
Yeah, get an Uber.
Just get an Uber. Who cares? Forget the Camry. Forget the Kia Carnival. Yeah. But all I'm saying is the concept with Dara Zero is you want the Ferrari experiences earlier on in life.
Yeah.
But I'm not like figuratively speaking. Don't actually go for it in your 20s. Yeah. Don't buy that because that's a silly purchase for your 20s. Yeah. But yeah, just get more of those great experiences front-ended.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think later in your life, that's when you're sitting down there going, do you remember that time we went to... I don't know why I'm always texting when I'm older. It's really strange. Do you remember that time when I was younger and I got that Ferrari and then I had it for a whole week and I had to sell it after that? That was great.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Maybe you need to spend more time.
Yeah, need to spend more time doing the Texan accent. I need to practice it more.
That'll be good. I think maybe 6 months, just skate to Austin or something.
But look, I think that back to what you were saying. Mm-hmm. And what you were saying is you want to make sure you want to give the support potentially to your kids at the right time, like your dad unintentionally gave it to you at the perfect time. Didn't even realize he did that.
Well, and it probably goes even beyond your kids, right? If you are fortunate to be in an abundant position, how many cool experiences can you create for others in your life that are important to you too in the moments when they actually need it the most, right? Well, that's cool. Like even what you mentioned before, the fact that you're planning this trip for your cousins and-
Yeah, well, you know, pay when's 40.
And for your 40. Well, that seems like such an aligned, given that you're in that position where you can do that. Yeah. What an awesome and aligned way, because it's going to mean more than doing this trip maybe in 15 years' time.
Yeah.
It's a perfect time for it. So that's great.
There was one more story that he spoke about in the book where he goes, he spent a massive part of his net worth on his 45th birthday.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he said, I didn't want to do it when I'm 50. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it when I was 45. And he did it when he was 45. And he wanted to do it in a way where he wanted to invite all of his friends, and some of his friends couldn't afford it. But he goes, you know what? Stuff it. I'll buy your tickets for you. Yeah. Can't afford the accommodation? Look, I get it. I'm going to buy the accommodation for you too. So he planned this whole extravagant trip where it was a whole week, totally inspired. We're totally doing this for our 40.
100%.
100%. And then he had a whole week celebration. Every night was a different theme, different music, different types of food. And he said this one moment where he was walking around seeing his best friends in his life, his people he loves most in his family, walking around this beautiful island, all laughing, eating good food. He said he was in heaven.
He flew in one of his favorite artists to play at his birthday. Yeah.
I mean, we've got to somehow try to get the Backstreet Boys. Oh, that's amazing. And anyway, but one thing
that he said- like 60 by then, that'll be great.
One thing that he said to me, said in the book that when I read it, it really moved me emotionally was he said, and if I waited till I was 50, my dad would have already passed away.
Mm-hmm.
My mum would have no longer been able to travel. Some of my friends wouldn't have been there. They didn't make it till 50, when he was 50. That made me feel really emotional. And that's what made me book this trip. Because it just made me think, like that the people you love most, their time and your time is not promised. This whole idea of I'm going to save, and then I'm going to do it. It's so flawed. It's so flawed. And it's such a dangerous way to live as well. You know, as dangerous as YOLO is, the other one is also really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was such an inspiring story that he shared. And that's why I said to Pei Wen, you got to celebrate your 40th. Yep. She goes, no, the big one's the big 50. I'm like, no, the big one is this next one.
Okay.
Let's celebrate it. So that was really touching. That was really moving. Don't wait until the people you really love are no longer around.
Nope.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
All right, which one you want to move into now?
I like the concept of time buckets.
Oh, yeah. Right? You did this exercise, didn't you?
Did a little bit of it. So,
yeah.
And this concept is looking at your life in 10-year chapters.
Mm-hmm.
right? So say, for example, our next one is 40 to 50, mm-hmm. 50 to 60, 60 to 70, 70 to 80.
So 10 years.
10-year blocks, right? Mm-hmm. And then just getting an idea, like obviously we don't know what the world's going to be like, whether we're going to be here in those times, mm-hmm. but nearly getting a picture around, well, what can I picture myself doing in that chapter of my life? Mm-hmm. And then what sort of resources will I need for that? Mm-hmm. So I often do this maybe over a 1 year or 3 year period. I've never really done it over decades.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it was interesting just sort of sitting down with that for a little bit. And what it made me realize is probably the remainder of the 30s, I think it's about building and it's about growing. Like I think about the things like doing this podcast, growing Recalibrate, our program, you know, growing Future Golf and building these awesome vehicles, because I think my creativity and entrepreneurship energy is probably, it's probably going to be its highest in this period of life right now. Mm. And that's something that's really cool. So I'm like, okay, awesome. Okay. Let's really step into that, because I can't imagine myself, this is just for me, in my 50s, having this same level of energy where it's like, oh yeah, like we're just going to put in all this time into thinking about strategies and execution and, you know, playing the game of business in that sense. So it's nearly around, all right, knowing that this is probably the time. And then at some point, that chapter is probably going to come to a slowdown or a conclusion, you know, like it may be getting closer to its peak and then just getting comfortable with that. A little bit like I think athletes, you know, it's like, okay, well, you have peaks and troughs in your career. So I'm just thinking about that from a business sense. And I think that it's nearly that 30 to 40 is, as an entrepreneur, I feel this is like maybe nearly getting close or the back end of the prime in a way, right? So that was one that stood out. Then like 40 to 50 was probably more around, all right, if I get to that position, it's like, how do you then use that to then help others? You know, fulfilling dreams, maybe playing more of a mentoring, advisory role. What does that then look like once that sort of notion of, right, building enough for my close family and myself and pursuing all of those things. It's like, okay, well, maybe 40 to 50 might be the chapter of actually impacting others and really working on fulfilling their dreams and potential and using everything that I've learned throughout that period. I think that'll be a nice thing.
A chapter on contribution.
On contribution, right? Mm. Like, and going heavier in that space. And then I think 50 to 60, the thing that I wrote down, or 50 to 70 is like, how do you then give it all away? Mm-hmm. Right? So once it's there, all that thing, because I'm guessing that will be more of a slight, like I can imagine myself like, at that time in of life, like it's simple things like playing a little bit of golf, gardening, you know, hanging out with hopefully grandkids or like something like that. It's like going to be that. So it's like, how do you actually just start giving it all away and getting to enjoy seeing others and utilize it all?
Which is perfect timing, because then your kids will be in their 20s.
Perfect timing in that point, right? So it's like, so yeah, so it's looking at that as little chapters, and it's like, okay, so it just got me thinking a little bit around what are the types of things and who is it that I'm going to potentially be in those chapters as well? In that time, and like, look, it's not really well thought out. Like, no, it isn't defined because very high level.
I love the chapter. Like, now you're currently in the chapter of building.
Yeah.
Then you're in the chapter of helping others and guiding.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's about how do I give it away?
How do you give it away?
That's beautiful, man. Yeah. That's beautiful. Mm. Far out. That's, I mean, what you're saying there as well made me think of another part of the book where Bill was talking about you die many deaths before you die. Mm-hmm. It's almost like different chapters, different chapters ends, right? And what he means by that is the version of you that is a student at in high school, that version of you is going to die. And that will give birth to the version of you that then goes to the university. Then that version of you dies. Then you have a child. And then you're a parent of an infant. But then that version of you also dies because that infant then gradually becomes an adult. Then you will be, again, it's I never thought about it like this. You die many deaths in one lifetime.
For sure.
And the entrepreneur in you will gradually die.
For sure.
Which will then give birth to this next version of you. So I never thought about it like that. And it's so interesting because then that at least creates urgency in many different chapters of life. As opposed to just looking at life as a whole, I only die one death. Mm-hmm. You go, you know what? My kids have got... You said this to them the other day that made me feel really sad. You said that, I think I'm getting to the end of the chapter where my son's going to want to just lay in bed and cuddle with me.
That's right. Yeah.
And you said that it's coming to an end and you can feel it.
Yeah. It's going to be like 10, 11, 12, you know, like at that point.
Like you don't want to be cuddling with dad in bed. Right. That's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's so true, because when you start to think of there are different chapters in life and there are certain versions of you that die along the way, that creates urgency for you to be more present in these chapters and really be in the moment with this chapter. Like, you want to be in the entrepreneurial moment right now, bro? Really focus on building.
Yep.
Really be present on building all these different vehicles.
And we are, in a way, we're racing time a little bit. Like, there is that
concept. You mean by racing time?
Like, say, for example, like, right now, as I head into my late 30s, if I want to be the best golfer that I can be, that window is probably coming closer to a close.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, golf's a little bit different. You get a little bit more time. But say 5-6 years ago in golf, like, one of the goals is, all right, how do you become like a scratch golfer, which means you can play close to par? That's going to get a lot harder as I head into my 40s or 50s.
Right.
Right? It was a lot easier when I was in probably my late 20s or 30s. Mm-hmm. So it's nearly even reevaluating some of these things that you may have in the back of your mind that you really want to look. Has it passed?
Ooh.
Or is that window still open? And do you need to then prioritize it a little bit more in that moment?
Interesting. So this this makes the time bucketing exercise even more interesting.
Yeah.
Because as you're time bucketing, which doors have already closed? That's which doors are closing?
Yeah.
And you need to prioritize.
Right. Similar to what we spoke about earlier, right? Backpacking. Like, that door's probably somewhat closed right now.
Closed for me, yeah.
Right? Like, maybe it might reopen when the kids have moved out or something like that. But even then,
how are you going to be able to carry a backpack?
I don't think we're backpacking, man. Like, I think it's probably business class flights and, like, going on a cruise, right? Like, that's hopefully what I'm picturing a little bit.
Me too.
A little bit of different type of... Please. It's like, I don't want to be just slugging around.
No, I don't want a 50-kilo bag. I can barely, like, carry a 10-kilo bag right now.
But it's like, what windows are also closing?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I think it's really interesting when you think about it like that too.
I like that kind of outlook. It's important to consider. Yeah. Because I think I have friends right now who sometimes think to themselves, I kind of want to start a side hustle. But they've got 3 kids, 2 mortgages. It's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
Not a really good time to go and start. Well, look, any time's a good time. But you've got a lot of risks now.
Yeah.
So there are some doors, and the reality is that there are some doors that have closed for you. Like, if you wanted to now become a pro golfer, sorry, Ali, I think that door's closed, mate.
Yeah.
You know, whereas for your son, myself.
Not becoming an NBA player now. Like, that's done.
Well, I don't think that was ever in your
card. That was never happening. Yeah, that was never happening. It's definitely not happening now.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm going to be 6'6". That's not happening anymore. So, it's just like, that window's closed.
But for someone like myself,
Your
boy, right?
Yeah.
For Romeo.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they really wanted to become pro soccer players, that door's still open for
you. That window's open.
That window's open, man. If you really want to go for it, it's still open for you. So, I think, what a cool frame. To look at where you currently are in life, what doors are still open for you? And I think this is a cool exercise too, slightly demoralizing, but I think it's a cool exercise to do, to give a reality check.
Yeah.
What doors have actually closed for you?
Yeah. And let go of them.
Let go of them.
Yeah, don't let
But acknowledge it though. Acknowledge it. What doors have actually closed? What parts of you have actually already died and you actually have to just mourn and say goodbye to?
That's right.
Then focus on the doors that are currently open.
Oh, I love that. I love what you said there, because so many people still live in the past.
Oh, they do,
They still think that they're that peak athlete that they were when they were like, you know, 18, or I could have been a professional, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you didn't. So now let's just move on and, like, let's figure out what you can sort of do right now.
I love that you are aware that this entrepreneurial version of you is dying. Or could be dead soon.
Or peaking. Like, you know, potentially. Yeah. Like,
well that's the thing. But let's say we've got 5 more years to play this entrepreneurial game.
Yeah.
10 more years to play this entrepreneurial game. It's acknowledging that the entrepreneur, I'm also acknowledging the entrepreneur in me, it's probably got another good 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I want to play another game.
Yeah.
I don't want to continue to play only this game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think it's kind of cool to realize that everything does come to an end.
Yeah.
Maybe someone else might take your baton and continue to play the game you're currently playing.
For sure.
But we all,
like,
I think the sad thing is, imagine I was still trying to play this entrepreneurial game in my 80s. Not giving myself the chance to write different chapters, become a different person, live a different life.
Yeah. But then there's also people that are so different, right? Like, I think about, you think about, like, the Warren Buffetts of the world.
Yeah, they love that.
Played elitely until they're in their 80s.
I don't think that's me, though.
I think the Salesforce guy started when he was, like, in his 50s.
Wow.
Right? So, there's going to be different things. So, it's not like we're saying, hey, that these are chapters that are predefined.
Yeah, no.
We're just talking more from our, like,
from our own,
like,
personal,
our internal feelings, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because I view this as well. Like, I've probably been on this journey, in a way, nearly already for 20 years.
Yeah, so have I.
Right? Somewhere around there, like, this seed had been planted around that. So, it's like, maybe it's got another 5 or 10 years. Maybe it's got another 30 years. I don't know. But I want to be open to the fact that it may end at some point as well. And then there'll be another chapter and actually having a little bit of a picture of what those other chapters might look like. Because that's more the exercise.
Time bucket.
Right? Like, would I be shattered if I was no longer an entrepreneur as I headed into my 50s? And I think I'm comfortable in saying that I probably wouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, as shattered. Long as I'm impacting others.
Yeah.
Right? And I've got something else there. And I'm still kind of in there, but more like, nearly more like a grandparent than actually being the person, you know, on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's like going from a player to a coach nearly and what that transition looks
and
like.
And then so. From like, so from a player to a coach
yeah.
to a person in the audience cheering from.
Just watching from the sidelines, yeah, you know.
That's cool. I love that. Yeah. I love that. I mean, the book also talks about, and I guess that's where it talked about, think of your life in different seasons, right? Yeah. It's like chapters, seasons, the death of this version of you to the birth of the next version of you. But I love all these different frames. Mm-hmm. You know, I think acknowledge which season of life you're in. And I think this is a great exercise. I actually messaged Pei Wen.
Yeah.
I messaged her this morning. Yeah. And I messaged my wife this morning. And I said to her, just writing this down. Don't worry about the context. I'll explain later.
Yeah.
Let's time bucket later tonight.
Yeah.
Because I want to do that. I want to go, in the next 10 years, what do you what do you really want to do? Yeah. You know, she's about to turn 40. Mm-hmm. And I go, what do you want to do from your 40s to your 50s?
Yeah.
Great exercise, man.
I said, funnily enough, when we finished reading this book, I went to Chantel. And I'm like, are we living in the most ideal way we should be living right now? Really? And do we actually need to look at it?
Have you already had that discussion?
No, we started. So again, planting the seeds. But it's like, let's think about it. It was more about the intention to sit down, set some time, and just reevaluate. Because we've had so much stuff going on lately. All great things.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, well, when's the last time we actually took stock of that?
Yeah.
Like, are we working too much? Are we spending enough time creating cool adventures and memories for the kids? Are we doing all these things? And the answer might be yes in a lot of those areas. But it's like, okay, well, is there a few adjustments that we need to make? Because a lot of the times, life just sort of
happens,
continues on,
and
it happens. And we don't take these moments just to stop, pause, reflect, and then also be honest and be like, oh, okay, well, maybe I don't actually like this routine that we're in anymore, or I don't like this activity that we do, or we need to change this part up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of framing those discussions. So I love that you're kind of,
No, I've already
the same thing. Yeah. That's awesome.
Tonight at dinner, I'm 100% going to be talking about this to Pei Wen. And I mean, on your point, there's a rule in there where he says, don't live life on autopilot. Because I think we tend to.
Yeah.
And that when life is on autopilot, that's when we don't stop and reflect on the last few months to try to make some course adjustments. Yeah. We just kind of stay on the same path. Month after month, everything is the same. Year after year, everything is the same. And here's the scary part. Decade after decade, nothing changes.
Yeah.
And that's where I think you get to the point where you feel like you're wasting your life. You know, and I think that's why these little check-in points are so important, aren't they? That's one of the reasons why we called our program Recalibrate.
Yeah.
It's because it's so important to recalibrate,
yeah.
right? You need to recalibrate what's currently important in this season, if you want to call it that. Yeah. We need to currently recalibrate in this chapter of your life. You know, let's face it, you have to make some minor adjustments. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you make no adjustments and you've been set on one path and you've just continued with that path, that's how you end up where you don't want to be.
Something cool that just came to mind then was like when we talk about recalibrate, we probably have never explained the program like this.
Yeah, but it's
literally like what happens when you recalibrate? You actually stop and you have a look and you check to make sure everything's okay and it's optimal.
Yeah.
Right? Like you that's-
Where am I?
Yeah.
Am I happy?
Yeah.
Where am I headed? Do I still want to go there? Holy crap, I don't want to go there anymore. I've become someone different. Now you're stopping and taking the time to analyze who you currently are, who you are becoming, where you actually want to go. Whereas I think when we don't do that, that's how we end up somewhere where we're like, why am I even doing this?
Well, it's how you minimize those regrets because you've actually looked at yourself, you know, in the mirror essentially. Whereas it's sometimes easier to just be like, hey, I'm not going to open that door and I'm just going to keep driving and driving. And driving, and then one day the car will break down.
Yeah.
It's like, shit, where did I end up?
Well, that's where you ignore the lights flashing on the dashboard.
That's right.
I used to do this. Yeah. When I was younger, man, I had a Camry, and it was a fantastic car.
Yeah.
But there was always this light that flashes, and I never paid it. I just no, it's fine. It's all good. It's, you know, it's going to go away. And some days it would go away, and then it would always come back. Gradually, the car died.
Yeah.
Because I just kept ignoring it.
I remember up until I was like mid-20s, I always drove, you know, like how your fuel tank has empty? And then there's that space that goes below empty.
Yeah,
you always very rarely was my fuel line above the E. It was always like $10 in the tank. And it was like, and then I remember like getting into a position where I could like fill up the tank.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
It feels so it's good.
Like, I'm like, this is just like having your phone battery on like 4% all the time and you're worried about, will I break down today or not? And I'd break down and often it would cause you more time and all that. And I was like, oh man.
That's actually a really good metaphor for, I went through a period of my life like that, Ali, where I was doing just enough to get by. It wasn't to do with making money. It was mentally. Yeah. I was not looking after myself. I was just kind of, my brain was like just functional and I wasn't thriving. I was just surviving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Okay, love that. All right, let's jump on to the next one. This was a weird one and it's know when to stop growing your wealth. Yeah. That's kind of like what you said before. It's, you have to understand that number because until you understand the number you need for you to live the life you want to live, you're just going to keep growing that wealth. Yeah. And this is a really interesting exercise because one of the things the book got us to do was, and I actually did it this morning and you did yours when you read the book, is to work out how long you're going to live for. So there's this great survey in the book where you answer a whole bunch of questions and it's like, do you smoke? Do you drink? How many times do you meet with the people you love in your life a week? All these different things. How well do you think you deal with stress? And then you go through this 10-minute survey and it works out the number that you're most likely going to live till. Yeah. You know, did you have parents who had cancer, et cetera? So what was your number?
I think it was like 86 or 88, somewhere around
there. Mine was 88. Yeah, okay, wow, so we got pretty close. Yeah.
Mine was 89.
Mine was 88 because I just did it.
No. I think it was, 88.
So it was around the same.
I did 88, yeah.
So did you do the exercise?
Yeah.
Well, so you worked it out. No. Did you work out how much you needed to be able to work out what you wanted to do?
Yeah, kind of did an estimate.
Okay.
Right, so that was using that equation that we used earlier.
Oh, right, the point times 0.7.
Yeah. Right. The 0.7 times that.
Well, I've only just started doing that. And it just kind of made me realize that, wow, okay. So for me to want to live the life that I want to live, there is a point in my career where I'm going to achieve enough money.
Yeah.
And then from that point, I can actually stop growing wealth. Mm-hmm. I never thought that that number existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really never thought that number existed in my life.
Yeah.
I always thought more is more.
Yeah.
Whereas I didn't know there was enough
point.
That
was a cool exercise. Yeah.
So this is quite a big shift for me.
Yeah, we won't disclose our numbers, but
I think
for
both
of us,
a little bit private.
But I think for both of us, it feels like on where we're at right now, we're probably, if we work at these levels, 3 to 4 years away, I'd say.
Which is just around when we're 40.
Yeah, around when we're 40. And we've been, and I think we're probably, you know, in a way, I'd say this from a position of like gratitude that I think we've done well in alignment with who we are to get that level of like abundance nearly. And we've been fortunate in that sense that our number can probably hit there. But what it, I think for us too, especially it means is that we might be getting diminishing returns if we still have the foot pressed down on the pedal for like another 20 years.
Yeah.
And I think a book like this is quite important for us too, given how I know that we like living our lives.
And I think if I didn't really read this and do that operating system upgrade, I would have been the guy that kept his foot on the pedal for another 20 years. 100%. 100%, that's me.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it feels really, like I feel a massive sense of relief as well, Ali, that I'm only really going to keep the foot on the pedal for another 3 to 4 years.
It was quite liberating.
It's quite
for
liberating.
Us.
Yeah, no,
we're like, hey man, woo! We don't have to do this until until we're 85.
Yeah, it's all right. I don't have to redline the car until I'm 69.
We can do more podcasts. It'll be fine.
You know what I mean? Like we can.
Yeah.
Like it felt like a weight off my shoulders doing that exercise.
That's cool.
And this is as far as, and I realize how fortunate we are too, because, like, you know, we live in Australia.
Yeah.
We are lucky. We've got a good healthcare system here. And I understand the privileges that come with that. But we can only speak on our own experiences, right? And I think there may be listeners out there that needed to hear this too.
Mm-hmm.
That work out that number for you. Work out what number you need every year. And then work out what number you want to give your kids.
Yeah.
And then give yourself a break.
Mm-hmm.
Cut yourself some slack. Use some of that life energy for yourself. Because when I did that exercise, Ali, and I kind of did my own numbers, I went, like I breathed a sigh of relief and it just felt good, man. Because I think it's bloody toxic if you're not careful. You'll just keep pushing to the point where, your whole purpose of life was just to work. Mm-hmm. That was it. You got nothing more out of it except work. Yeah. All right. What's the next one?
Dude, I think I'm nearly getting to a wrap up and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
We always joke that I'm a camel. But for the first time ever during the pod.
You need a pee?
I need to go to the toilet.
Oh, you need a pee. You need a pee. I love this.
45 episodes in. We usually end the episodes and then you're like, I need to run out of here.
Because we're not wrapping it up because there's still things I want to talk about. Cool. So we're just going to take a quick pee break.
Yeah,
and we'll be right back. Oh, that was so funny. All right, welcome back, everyone.
Let us out of here.
Welcome back. Ali has gone and relieved himself.
Just thank you, everyone, for allowing us
to give us that opportunity. Yeah. Next time, we just need to create some kind of hand gesture under the table where you're like, hey, man, I just need to take a pee break. We've got to come up with a gesture. We've got to come up with something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, I feel good.
You feel good. Yeah. All right, we're back in this. Die with zero.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Part two.
Now, the thing that I really wanted to speak about as we continue the pod is I've lost my train of thought. What was the last thing we spoke on? No, it wasn't peeing. The last one was, just feeling a big sense of relief.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I know where I am now. So we're entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
I also spent a lot of time with some very successful entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
I see a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the pattern. Entrepreneur builds business. Entrepreneur really passionate. Entrepreneur loves life. Entrepreneur gets an exit. Entrepreneur has money. Entrepreneur now feels sad. Entrepreneur doesn't know what to do. Entrepreneur now is bow bow. Entrepreneur creates another company similar to what he did before.
Yeah.
Entrepreneur feels good, feels passionate.
Yeah.
Entrepreneur sells company. Entrepreneur feels sad.
Oh.
It's the same story over and over again, right? And I've seen this in so many of my entrepreneurial buddies where they... And some of them, it's unfortunately, they don't start up another company. They just stay in this state of sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And then they always reminisce on the peak years of, oh, that's when those were the days. And that was with the book we read. I can't remember what it was called now, but it was with Gaddy. The two Melbourne entrepreneurs.
Catch of the Decade.
Catch of the Decade, where they said that the happiest times they had were when they were building the business.
Mm-hmm.
So it just made me think. It just means that the idea of retiring and just traveling the world and doing nothing, that's not realistic either.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't realistic, man. No. Because you'll do that for a period and knowing the way we're wired, we're going to get bored.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the idea is ever building something up and then selling it and then doing nothing. I actually think that if you asked me, what would my optimal 50s look like when I'm doing the time bucketing exercise? Do you know what it is?
Mm.
Doing what I'm currently doing, 30% of my time.
Mm.
In other words, part-time. So I think there's a big chapter of part-time entrepreneurship that I'm really excited about. Whereas right now, I'm full-time entrepreneurship, right? And full-time entrepreneurship is pretty stressful. It's pretty full-on. There's a lot going on with this. Whereas I think the next decade for me as I move into my 40s to 50s, it's part-time entrepreneurship.
I'm just laughing because I'm just trying to imagine you doing something part-time.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Dude, I know it's
hard. I've never met anyone that does full-time plus like you do.
Yeah.
That foot is always down. Like your part-time will be the most intense 4 hours a week.
No, but I'm serious though.
Yeah.
I think that...
It's a very cute thought.
Do you think it's a cute thought? Yeah, okay. Well, I always think this because I see people leave the thing that they love, sell the thing that they love, and then find themselves miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing what to do. And then they end up doing something else that just gives them part of that happiness. Whereas I think that there's something really to do with... Imagine you got to do what you do at half the level of intensity.
Yeah. I already do it at pretty low.
Okay. So it's not relatable for you.
I'm joking. Yeah. I get what you're saying. I think you're right though. I love that. It's like nearly getting the bits that you love.
Yeah.
And that probably is a very organic evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like people, that's generally the life cycle is I'm going to work really hard and then I'm just going to retire. Like that's that notion. It's like nothing. It goes from like 100 to zero. Whereas I love what you're saying here. It's like a gradual drawdown.
Yes.
You know, like you're not just going from like full exhilarating about to just break.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're going to go from 100% and then maybe start dialing it down a little bit. And by the sounds of it, you want it. It's like, how do I still do the things that I really enjoy that are part of this journey?
Yeah.
But without, the
pressure
and the intensity, which is, I love that. Well, so here's another question.
Okay.
Why right now do we have this perception of pressure and intensity?
Oh, that's a good question.
And is that something that we need to question? Because this is the other thing, right? Like, so many of us get burnt out and cooked while we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever that time frame is, where we're like, we just got to work really, 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 really hard to get our nest egg.
I think I know the answer, part of my answer.
Yeah.
I have so many desires, so many wants. And because my desires and my wants sometimes are just so extravagant and so wild that it creates pressure for me in the present that I don't have enough. And that also comes from the desires of not just things I want for myself, but I want the best for my family. I want the best for my kids. I want the best for my wife. I want the best for my parents. I want the best for my brother, right? For you, Ali, for my friends. I just want the best for everyone around me. And I mean that in every sense, materialistically. I mean that from a point of view of creating experiences. That definitely is a massive contributing factor for why I feel that pressure.
Yeah.
What about you?
I want to just expand on that point, Ryan. And it's funny, when we put that pressure on ourselves, what happens to our energy?
I get stressed.
It's stressed.
I get anxious.
And then we want to be the best for all these people.
Yeah.
And then how do we present ourselves?
This is a little close to home. So, I honestly, the way I present myself, like the last few months where I've been feeling this, Ali, to pay when is a stressed version of me, an anxious version of me, a fearful version of me, an overworked version of me.
Yeah.
It's not great.
It's an interesting paradox, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Like, we have the intention that we're going to have to work this hard.
I feel so called out right now.
It's a safe place, bro. I got you.
Yeah, thank you.
but it's complete. The reason why we bring that up is because it's so normal for us when we're in the pursuit of these things.
Yeah.
When we're trying to optimize in one area, there's going to be a natural duality of where we're not optimizing in another area.
Yeah.
And I think it's just drawing awareness to it, right? Because they're not like game over moves.
Yeah.
There's often just adjustments.
Yeah.
There's slight adjustments in the moment. And I wanted to bring that up because I think so many of us, like, we do that, right? We go so hard on one area of life that it's at the detriment of something else that's important. And we'll always have these that exist. And what I'm starting to learn now, it's just getting more comfortable with that and not punishing myself on that journey, right? Like, I know now just from doing it enough, if I go really hard at work, there's a good chance I might be able to create something pretty cool. But I know while I'm in that zone, I might have full tunnel vision on. And I'm probably going to neglect maybe my health. I want to neglect my kids. I'm going to neglect something, right? And it's like, it's nearly now just being like, hey, that's not a surprise anymore. It's going in there with a conscious decision, knowing that for me to go into that space, there's going to be a price to pay. Am I comfortable with that price that I need to pay for it? And a lot of the times now as I get older, because I know enough of that, I can't look at myself and be like, hey, I'm just openly going to pay that price. You know, and it's nearly like a prize fighter in a way. It's like, there's only a few more fights left. So I want to use these wisely because I don't want to have that trade-off or that regret as much. And you never master it, but it's just I think it's an interesting concept to be aware of, even when we are in this chapter, that it's not like, hey, we just get given this free pass. And you mentioned it before, like, so many people wear their hard work as a badge of honor.
Yeah, I do.
And I think we all do to an extent, especially when we're tired of that. It's like, hey, well, I've done this to do this. It's like we nearly trade these trinkets off there. But is it the right move? You know what I mean? Like,
yes and no.
It is yes and no, right?
Yeah.
Because there's so many benefits to it and there's cost. But then I think it's nearly about, all right, in this chapter of life, do I need to make an adjustment?
Yeah.
And what does that then look like?
You just gave me an unlock. I don't think you realized the unlock you gave me. And the unlock is, I think about all the wonderful experiences that I want to give my family. I think about all the wonderful material things that I want to give my family. I think about the safety net I want to create for my family, the abundance, all of that. Do you know what I don't think about? I don't think about the version of me that I want to give my family. I don't. I don't realize that how I show up in my marriage, how I show up as a father, how I show up as a friend, that is also something that I give the people I love. And in the pursuit of wanting to give so much financial abundance, material abundance, experiential abundance, I don't realize that by pressuring myself so much in those areas, I'm showing up as a lesser version of myself for them in the present. And I think I've over-indexed on the other things to the point where, you know, calling myself out here, right? I'm happy to share this, but it's like when you came down last time you came down, the moment you walked into the house, Pewen immediately says to you, Vin needs your help. You know, and it was because I pressured myself so much, Ali. Because again, from what my parents did, right? My parents were in the position where it was like, everything we do is for you. We're going to break our backs for you. We'll sacrifice our health for you and all of that. And so in my mind, it's like, I need to do the exact same thing to serve my family, to be an honorable parent, to be a good parent. And man, you just gave me the biggest unlock, because I don't just give my kids money, experiences, and abundant in experiences. I don't just give them that. I'm also something that I give them.
Mm.
How I show up is also something that I give them. And you said this to me. You said, Vin, when you are light, when you have this free sense to you and you're feeling good, you have, like, that impacts the people around you like crazy. And I think I've forgotten that.
Mm.
Somewhere along the way, I just forgotten that. I've forgotten that I am also something that I give the people I love.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool and vulnerable reflection, right? And it, as you were saying that, one of the things that I was just thinking about there is that the only difference there is that there's this imaginary thing called pressure.
Yeah.
It might be real, but it's like this thing that we nearly self-inflict on ourselves, right? And we spoke about this when you reflect, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Mm. It's like, what's fuel versus real?
Yeah, I really like that.
Right? Like, what's something that you might be feeling? So you might be feeling the pressure, but what's the reality? Like, what are the indicators that you're seeing? And we went through a couple of checks and I was like, oh, well, everything's actually all right. I'm just putting this potentially undue pressure on myself. But then that's having a real impact on the way that it's impacting my energy and how I'm feeling about the journey at the moment.
Yeah.
Right. So it's nearly just reflect. I think a lot of the time it's just about taking a moment just to reflect.
Yeah.
And just pausing for a second.
Mm.
And then being like, all right, well, where do I need to just be a little bit easier on myself?
Yeah.
Where do I have to forgive myself? And I now think back. I think back experience dividends, going back to that concept. Mm. I think back to the pandemic when the world stopped. Now, in that moment, for most of us, it was like, oh, this sucks, you know, like all these things that we can't do. But there was also a beautiful simplicity.
Yeah.
Because when all these sort of options were there and you knew that everyone else was just sort of chilling and doing their own thing, there wasn't really all that much pressure. It was just like everyone's like, oh, well, maybe the world is ending and we're never going to leave the house again. It's like, and then you get to a point where maybe I'm just going to do puzzles for the rest of my life, right? Like all those options are just diminished. And it's hilarious how quickly you can actually readjust to it.
Mm.
And now think back to that time with such fond memories.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I wish.
You were thriving during
that period. Oh, man. I'm like, in a way, I love the simplicity because as the maximizer of experiences and opportunities, there was something very freeing about only have 5 to 6 things that you could maximize and optimize.
Mm.
There wasn't the option of doing this and that or this or that or this and that. It was just like, hey, man, you've got like 4 things. It's like, go for your walk.
Yeah.
Build some Lego.
Mm.
Hang out with the kids.
Watch some Netflix.
Mm. Sleep. Meditate. and then repeat. And then go again. Yeah. And I'm like, there was such a, like, I can think of these really vivid memories of just really simple things, but it looks so bright when I think back on it. You know, like just little walks around the local neighborhood or like having a trivia night. Like all these little experiences that you just got to savor a little bit more because the world was a little bit slower.
You see, that again links to what I was thinking. You're saying that during that period, you relearned about the importance of simple things and the joy simple things can bring.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in my mind, it's if I want to maximize this experience, I have to create the most extravagant experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think like that naturally in my head, and here's the thing, I also want to protect that part of me.
Yeah.
Because I think the only reason why I'm living the life I'm living now is because I have that dreamer inside me.
For sure.
right? If I didn't have that dreamer inside me, then I wouldn't be living the life I live right now. So it's kind of like, I understand that that dreamer part of me, like, I love you.
Yeah.
You're very good.
Yeah.
But I also think that dreamer part of me also creates my own hell sometimes. Oh, because it was so funny, man. I was talking to Pei Wen about this. One of the pressures I put on myself is, you know, I want to be able to design her the most amazing home with the most amazing kitchen and all of this. And, you know, it's going to cost a lot of money. Yeah. And then I remember talking to her about it. She just goes, I would so much just rather you being at peace than any of the things you just mentioned. Like, I'm way happier with just you being at peace. Whereas there I was going, we got to make sure we do this with the kitchen, do that with the kitchen. And she just goes, I actually don't really care about all of that. And what that reminded me, and I teach communication, is that don't forget to realign yourself with what's important with the people you love. Because you might be out there as a father, as a mother, and you think that all these things are important to your kids. I've got to make sure I leave them $1 million, $10 million, when your kids, what they actually want with you is, hey, Dad, I just want to play zoo right now. And I just want to, I want to build a zoo out of cardboard, and I just want you to be present with me to build this zoo. I don't actually need you to leave me $50 gazillion. I don't need that. I just want you to play with me right now. You know, and like, I think this book has just really changed the way that I think about money, changed the way that I think about life. It really has been medicine for my soul. Yeah.
It's interesting, right? Like, the more and more that I think about life now as well, maybe the most valuable thing that we can do in this game, it might actually just be exchanges of energy opposed to what we actually have or do. If you look at that order there, right? Like, say right now, like, the having and the doing is, all right, we're doing a podcast. We have a podcast. It might go out to an audience. But the actual, I think the real valuable part here, it's ultimately the exchange of the energy, right? It's the exchange of the energy here right now. Like, imagine if we were sitting here and we had some financial pressure that it's like, hey, this podcast has to get X amount of views and we need to then distribute. And we're in the back of our mind, we're thinking about, and then there's all these things that we have to do, and then we have to get it out there, and then we got to make sure that we give the plug.
Roll here.
Yeah, put the, put, you know, make sure the sponsors are happy and all of that.
Yeah.
I think that would have an impact on the exchange of energy. That we're able to have in this. And then we have this exchange of energy, and then hopefully that then translates to the listener, right? And
this
then
energy just like, here is changing their energy over there.
It changes that energy over there. And I think the reason why we always gravitate to wanting to do this pod, and we haven't, is because I think it's got quite a pure exchange of energy in it. Right? It's not really clouded with other bits and pieces. And, and I was also thinking about this in relationships, right? Like, I think about me and Chantal were talking about this, and it's like, as you know, when you've been married for when you've been together for like 20 years, a lot of the times life becomes like, nearly in a way, it's like a routine, right? It's a practice where it's like, okay, we've got certain things that we have to do. We have to, we're doings, we're human doings, and we're human beings. But what can get lost is, what's the quality of the energy that we're exchanging, right? It's like, you could tick all the boxes, like, oh, awesome. House is good. Finances are good. Kids are going to school. House is clean. You know, there's all these like doing things that are ticked, but they're amazing and they provide the foundations. But then often you can see that relationship. It's like, okay, well, what's the actual quality of the exchange of the energy in this? And I think that trips up a lot of people, and that makes it very confusing, where it's like, all the boxes are kind of ticked here, you know, but like,
why doesn't it feel good?
Why doesn't it feel like that? Like, what's the, and how much are we actually putting into the exchanges of the energy? And that sometimes is tough. And I realize that more and more from the people around me right now, is the things that they do for me, and the, like, say, the practical value of that. As you get older, I feel that that loses its value a little bit more, you know, and it's more around how good's the quality of the energy and the experiences that we can then exchange.
What do you think influences the energy, pragmatically speaking?
Yeah. I think in the world that we live in, a lot of the times, it's like, say, for example, if you've got a really busy job,
okay,
that's going to take a lot of your energy supplies, right? Like, Chantel's a teacher, for example. She could come home nearly like ready to pass out because she's given 8 hours of being all in with the kids, right? So that has an energy cost. Like, say if I'm like traveling for work and I'm doing a business deal, or there's something that's taking up a lot of mind capacity in there, that's going to be taking significant reserves of energy there.
Right.
Right. I think the other thing is, especially in the age that we're heading into, it's the way that we nourish our mind, body, and spirit. Right. So how healthy are we? Right. If I'm sitting there and I'm eating bad food, I'm not sleeping much, I'm not exercising, I haven't meditated for a while, I know that's going to have an impact on my energy. Right. Especially now. Maybe in my 20s, didn't have to do all that stuff. Right. You get like these free tokens or something when you're younger, where you can do whatever you want to your body, and the next day it's like perfectly fine again. Whereas people will relate to this as you start heading closer to your 40s. It's like you make one wrong move.
How did I wake up tired?
You make one, you sit weird and your neck's out for like 4 days, right? Like, so.
Dude, if I don't have the right pillow, I wake up, my neck feels sore.
I never got a massage until I was like in my 30s. Now it's like I feel like I need one every 2 weeks.
That I still right? am not indulging
right? in. Right, like it's like, it's just like the joints just need to get stretched out. Like all these things that just never happen. So I think we have to, in this chapter of life, like it's one of the things I noted down, it's investing energy and resources, time and money into maintaining, I feel like maintaining my body. It's never going to be more important than it is right now.
Yeah.
Compared to what it, you know, like what it was 5-10 years ago, I could get away with a lot more. So yeah, all these things I think have an element of our energy. Like if we're stressed, if we have pressure, that impacts our energy. Like you could have the best experience of your life, but if you're sitting there with fear and stress and you're thinking about other things there, and you know, like I invest a lot of time and energy into just trying to get that, you know, I always tell you about it. It's like, how's the breathing right now?
Yeah, I know.
How's the clarity of mind? Like I think these things are so important in terms of being able to enjoy those experiences a lot more. And some people are just naturally better at it.
Yeah.
Like Chantel, for example, she doesn't need to do all that stuff. Like she could just get into a moment and she'll vividly enjoy it and remember it, reminisce on it. I've got to do a bit more. Like I need a few photos, I need to write about it, I need to be in a nice space. Like I'm just saying, have that natural skill set of just to be able to really enjoy a moment. I had to practice that. Whereas I think some people, you know, you see them, they're just so happy-go-lucky. It's like, wow, that person's so light and free and they're just infusing that energy in there and it just happens naturally. Like I'm always so envious of those types of people.
Because you have to work at it.
Yeah, I've got to work at it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But that's because we're all different.
Yeah.
I think to summarize what you kind of mentioned there and also to solidify my own lesson here as well is that energy that we bring to others sometimes is more valuable than any material thing we can provide them, than any amount of money we can leave them. And I think one of the things that influences that energy dramatically outside of health, outside of our work, is also out of the experiences we create for ourselves. Because let's say, for example, you really love going to a concert and you didn't spend the money, the $600 to go to that concert because you were like, you know what? I'm just going to wait. And as a result of waiting in the present, you're not as energetic. You don't have that passion that's filling your bones after listening to your favorite band and that energy that you have inside. And then as a result of that, the people around you don't benefit. You don't benefit. The people around you don't benefit. And then by the time you feel comfortable spending that money, one of the band members is dead. So now all of a sudden you can't get that energy anymore. So all I'm rethinking now is, wow, the more I'm able to nourish my own life through creating memories that's going to light me up, the more I'm going to show up better for my family. Because if I did get to go to that Backstreet Boys concert, dude, I'm going to feel freaking amazing. Like that's kind of moved to one of my top priorities now in my life. Yeah. I need to go see the Backstreet Boys, right? I can't wait. As long as you love me, I want it that way. Classic. Yeah. Quit Playing Games With My Heart, lesser known song, but also classic. Spanish Eyes, great. They do a great version of that too. Quit Playing Games With My Heart, I already mentioned it, but I just need to
say. Some of our audience is leaving right now.
Such a good song. It's okay. If you don't like it, go.
It's all right.
Now, here's the thing. They're still all alive right now. Yeah. And I know that if I prioritize an experience like that for myself, I'm going to show up better. Whereas I think my idea of serving the family, only for others, I think it's not healthy for me. It's actually not healthy for me. Yeah. It actually makes me show up worse for them in the present. And I think this book has helped me recalibrate that. You know what? There's an element of selfishness, dying with zero. And I think that element of selfishness, saying it in inverted commas, I think it's, I need to reframe that. I think for the first time in my life, I'm starting to learn if I want to look after others, I actually need to look after me first. Mm-hmm. Man, it feels so weird saying it still, but I think I'm starting to understand yeah. it.
You're getting close to that part of the journey. It's cool. Yeah. And even going back to this concept, like, you're actually one of the people that taught me this. I remember in one of your communication workshops.
Looking like after yourself?
Well, just energy. And right, bringing the energy. Right, right. I remember it was always a question you'd get in those workshops. And I think maybe even I asked
Yeah, people ask me about my energy a lot.
It's like, how do you... Yeah. Because I was always... I think a lot of people experience this. They're like, I bring such a great energy to work. And then it's not that great when I'm at home. Right? And I love the... If you want to share it, the story you shared the other day when you were at the pet shop.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And you have this... You, out of nearly anyone I know, you have this great ability to change people's energies.
So okay, just okay. Excited. So I was at the pet shop. I was getting some food for my dogs. And there was a lady there who had a dog. And I was like, that dog looks so cool. So I started talking about the dog. And I infused lots of good energy into that conversation. I was like, oh, what kind of dog is that? And she was like, oh, it's an Airedale Terrier. And I had this great conversation with her. Learned so many things about that dog. They used to use that dog in World War II. Fascinating, because that dog has immense levels of courage. So they use that dog so that it can carry messages between platoon members. The bombs and the grenade sounds didn't scare them. So they would still run straight through that. Sick-ass dogs. Wow. Airedale Terriers. Then it became my turn to pay for the dog food. And then I paid for the dog food, spent about $300-$400. And then at the end, I forgot to buy a bag. So I was like, oh, crap, I need a bag. And they're like, oh, bag's a dollar. And I was like, ah, oh, can you do a $1 transaction? And the lady goes, no, it's $10 minimum. The lady with the dog, with the Airedale Terrier, leans in and says, I'll pay for your bag. And I was like, oh, no, you don't have to, but oh, that's amazing of you. So I got a free bag.
Yeah.
So because I radiated this beautiful energy, she paid for the bag for me. I know it's only a dollar and people are thinking, oh, dude, get over it.
Yeah.
But then I leaned over towards after that and I said, hey, can I just say that kind gesture you just did for me, today I'm going to go and do something really kind for somebody else because of this beautiful ripple that you just sent my way. And then she kind of leaned over and she said, but that ripple wouldn't have started if you didn't start the ripple. And I thought, man, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Just because of that little interaction I had with this lady who had an unusual looking dog, that led to this good amount of vibes that I went straight back to the car and just started gloating to my wife. Like, oh my God, I got this bag for free. And then after that, I had this great conversation with her and said, I'm going to do something nice. So what's this nice thing we're going to do for someone? We ended up just going through a takeaway thing and then paying for the person behind us kind of thing. Yeah. And then I just thought, that is so cool. And this happens in my life a lot, Ali. That's what I was saying to you the other day. And I said, this happens in my life a lot. Because I like to make others feel good through energy transfer. And that energy transfer is often done through the use of my communication skills. And I feel like I have this wonderful life where these little wonderful things happen weekly to me.
Oh. And I've seen it firsthand. As
I know you have.
You know, like even when we're in restaurants and stuff, it's like the vibes around the place change a little bit. Like the waiters are nice. The people around are like smiling. Like you just have these little interactions. And it's amazing how it does radio. Like I remember you even saying with that story, like even the people behind the line, like were smiling. Yeah. Like,
the cashier was
in there. Like, so all of a sudden, like 5-6 people have had this experience that's outside of the norm.
Yeah.
It didn't really cost you anything.
No.
You just added some nice energy.
I got a free bag, dude. It didn't cost me anything.
You won. You won a bag.
$1. Yeah, that's true.
But it's a beautiful, it's nearly a skill, right? Like a lot of the time people just won't put in that extra level of energy.
Yeah.
To create that special experience.
Do you know what you just made me realize? Dying with zero doesn't just mean dying with zero money. Dying with zero energy left in the tank too. Why leave it on the table? Do you know what I mean? It's like we're saving up our money as if we get to take it with us. It's like we're saving up this energy force like we're going to be able to take it with us. Nah, mate. Once you're dead, mate.
You just made me realize something.
Wow, we're having a lot of epiphanies.
Yeah, we're having epiphanies.
Woo!
I could save energy.
Dude.
See, you leave a lot of your energy on the table.
I leave a lot of it on the table. What do you keep?
I probably spend the money a little bit freer.
Yeah, you do.
But yeah, I think I could save energy. So, like, say in that interaction, I'm the person that'll potentially have headphones on, be two back in the line. I like the energy that you're sharing, and I want to,
take
some of that up.
I'll take it.
But
I ain't giving it.
Yeah.
Like, so, you're a tight ass when it comes to energy.
Maybe, or like-
You're so generous with money, but you're a tight ass with energy.
Or I need to be around people that have that energetic thing, and then I'll interact with it. I won't be the one to instigate it, though. often.
Is it because you don't have it?
No.
Or is it because you've got it, but you're not?
I think I'm probably more naturally introverted in that sense.
Right, right, right. So that's an introverted extroverted thing.
Yeah. So I'm like an introvert extrovert. Like I can be extroverted, but naturally I think I'm more introverted. And I think the big difference there with extroverts and introverts, it's not about like a lot of people just think an introvert's somebody that just doesn't communicate or they're just very quiet.
It's much more complicated.
I think it's actually more around energy.
Yeah.
I think an extrovert, they feed.
Get energy
from giving a lot of energy, right? Yeah, Whereas an introvert nearly has to like conserve a little bit, but they get energy when it comes sort of their way.
Okay, and then
the battery maybe just isn't.
You're recharged as in a different way. Well, you're recharged when you're more on your own
and introspective, and like silent and potentially a bit quieter, right? That's when the battery starts charging. Whereas an extrovert, I think they're just getting charged while they're really giving out a lot of energy as well. Yeah.
So it just means
you're like more a solar panel. I'm like one that has to go to the energy station and then it goes through
get charged up. well, it just means that you have to be more strategic with where you expend it. And I think whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, not only should you die with zero money, give your all while you're here.
Yeah, give the energy.
Give the energy. And look, if you don't have to give the energy to a random stranger if you don't want to. I think it's kind and it's nice and you'll be surprised with what kind of energy you get back. Mm-hmm. Dude, this happened yesterday. I was standing in the grocery store holding Melody and I was just humming to Melody and singing to her and humming to her. And I was out in public and I don't really care. So I just did it. Mm. And then this old lady just kind of walked up to me and said, "I think you are the sweetest father right now. You're just the sweetest dad." Mm-hmm. And that, like, do you know how good that made me feel? And I was like, yes, I am. Because I was just there bouncing along, singing to my daughter. Yeah. And then it was just such a beautiful comment she made. Right? And I sometimes feel like if you feel like you're missing out on some of that, don't be afraid to just give away some of that energy. Because it's so true. It sounds so cliche. It makes me want to vomit and die. But you get what you give.
Yeah.
And if you're putting out good vibes out there into the world, those good vibes come back to you. They come back to you.
And you do it nearly the best. Like the return you get on that energy, it's awesome. Like so many cool things happen all the time when you're giving that up.
But I think I do live out the die with zero energy.
Yeah.
I don't think I do the die with zero money. Mm. So I've got a major operating system upgrade from this book. And I think this book has made me, this is going to make me a better father.
Now you're going to be tired and poor. That's great.
I'm going to live with zero. I'm going to write a book and be like, damn, Bill Perkins.
We'll do this in like a year.
And you're like, oh, dude.
I was like, hey, bro.
That last year was really messed up.
Man.
We're going to have to start putting ads on this podcast.
Speed stick.
Yeah.
Do you perspire too much? Speed stick. Proud sponsor of our podcast. Please buy it, guys, because we are in massive debt. No, I'll say this too, man, in that. It's a balance of both, right? Because we always come to this conclusion.
Yeah.
It's both. You have to live in the moment. You have to live for tomorrow. You have to do both.
You have to enjoy the past.
You have to enjoy. Yeah, you have to reframe the past. Yeah. And you have to, you know, I think it's all of it.
Yeah.
I definitely have over-indexed with living in the future. And this book has helped me recalibrate. Yeah. It's helped me do that operating system upgrade. Any final words from you with this particular book? Yeah. Don't shake your head. Have a quick look at your notes. I'm having a quick look at mine here as well. To see if there's any final things I want to say.
Yeah.
I'll share mine first and then you can end. Or do you want to say something and then I end? Because
One that I saw there is just the concept of risk, right? And fear.
Okay.
Is one of my takeaways is for the listeners there. Is at the end of this, do something that you've been putting off that you perceive as a risk.
Oh,
and
I
just
love that.
Really dig into whether it really is a risk or not.
Mm.
Right. And I think back to starting Future Goal for my business, right? There was a lot of like perceived risks there. If you thought about it just very, you know, traditionally, where it's like, hey, well, you're moving from a great secure job that looks after you and the family to something where you're creating an imaginary golf club that doesn't even really exist. Right. But then when I actually broke it down and I'm like, well, that job has some risks as well. Like it might feel like it's a secure thing, but I'm at the whim of a really big organization. I'm at the whim of being aligned to a certain boss that may not be there in 2 or 3 years' time.
Mm.
I have one person that dictates, you know, how my life plays out. And if I mess up, that's kind of done. Mm. right? So there was like, when I actually break it down, there was risks there. It wasn't just all like, hey, you're in the most secure, risk-free position. There was actually a lot of risk there. I'm like, I've probably maximized everything that I've learned here and I can't really go. So in a couple of years' time, I might be so demotivated and I won't have any energy that I want to give you because it's just going to be collecting the paycheck, which was really scary to me. And I'm like, well, this other thing, I might actually learn something new, you know? I might be able, the upside's very exponential. I'll be able to connect with people that I really want to connect with. Mm. And it's really breaking down things that you might perceive as a risk and looking at it with a level of detail that you may not have put on it. And also understanding what point in life you're at and what risks you can actually take. Like we spoke about it a little bit earlier. If you're 20 years old, just know you can take a lot more risks, especially financially. You're losing $1,000 right now, we can guarantee you, probably not going to impact you that greatly over the next 30 or 40 years.
$10,000.
Be able to figure it out, right? There might actually be a good lesson in that. If you do take a risk and lose it, it's going to serve you for the next 20 or 30 years. Especially if you have that mindset, right? It might be a little bit more, it might be different when you're in your 40s and 50s where your risk is probably more around time. It's like if you don't do that thing now, you might not have the chance to do it because your energy won't be there. So just knowing that there's a few things that you might be holding off due to perceived risk or fear, explore whether it's worth actually just making the move to go and pursue that now or in the very near future.
Beautiful, brother. Mm. Wow, that was really well done. Mm. I'm not going to be able to top you this time.
You always do.
What I'll end on is something a lot shorter.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Long. There you go. Well,
Long. I mean, that's an improvement I can make.
Yeah, I'm glad that even though I only took 2 minutes, this podcast has been going on for like 2.5 hours, give or take.
Because now I need a pee.
That was the bit that ruined it. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Look, no worries. No worries.
Yeah, I thought you were good at exchanging energy.
I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
I think I just feel a little bit threatened. That's why I kind of made that little negative comment. I feel a little bit threatened. Safe space. No, I think this is all I just want to say. I finally learned it's not just about learning how to make money grow. It's learning about how to make my life grow. That's it.
That was great.
Like, that was it. Yeah, thanks.
Not as good as not mine, as good but... As
yeah, no, but I, for the longest time, valued making my bank account grow.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to make my life experiences grow. And I think this book has made me a more wholesome person. And I'm going to be able to ride into my late 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and not regret. I think this book has actually saved me from a pretty big lifetime of regret. I now will not be, and I can say this with a lot of confidence, I'm not going to be in my 80s on my deathbed, in my 90s on my deathbed, hopefully hundreds. We'll see how long we live. But I know that this book has actually course-corrected me. I've recalibrated. I've had a major system upgrade. So I'm not going to be laying there going, shit, should have worked less, should have done more, should have created more memory dividends. And I feel like I'm going to be so wealthy in my 80s with memories where I get to reminisce with you, with Pei Wen, with my cousins, my family, my children, and go, do you remember that time we did this? Do you remember that time we did that? Wasn't that wild? Wasn't this crazy? As opposed to sitting there going, how am I going to divvy up my cash and give to the people? Right. So, yeah. This was a really important book for me. I hope you give this book a read, our listeners, if you feel that you are similar to me or you feel like you're trapped in that kind of rat race where you're continually just more. I hope this gives you a bit of a system upgrade too.
Beautiful.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to the Vin and Ali Show. Thank you for being a part of our journey as we continue to grow our minds and live a more meaningful and happier life. We'll see you in the next episode. Hi, hello, it's Vin. Thank you so much for listening to the Vin and Ali Show. We've created something that we're really excited about and we want to share it with you. It's called Recalibrate. It's a 12-step process that helps you create more clarity and more alignment in your life. It's the exact approach that both Ali and I have been using to live happier lives and to achieve all of our wildest dreams in the last 7 years. It's been crazy. Being one of our loyal listeners, we wanted to share a special something with you. Visit recalibrate.online/Vin and Ali to access the course for 70% off. I hope you will check it out.